sir.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, June 14th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Costello.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here as well. The council just is reconvening into open session from closed session, and since I was not in closed session, I was a bad boy, but I'll explain why in a moment. But we're going to let the Mayor Pro Tem report out of closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and there's nothing to report on actions we took in closed session.
Good. Thank you. All right. That takes us to item three, our flag salute. We're proud to have the veterans of foreign wars here this evening, and Charles Howell and Amy Clayton. If you would please lead us in the flag salute, and then if you would remain standing for our invocation, Pastor Paul Jones is here to do that for us.
Those in caps, would you please military salute? All others with your right hand over your heart. Before us are the colors of our nation. Would you join me in the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would you please bow your heart with me? Our Heavenly Father, we pause tonight to thank you for our country and that you have permitted us to be born a citizen of this great land, the United States of America. It was President George Washington who said, "Faith is absolutely vital to good government and strong leadership. A moral nation cannot be maintained without reliance on faith. And of all the dispositions which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports and pillars of human happiness," unquote. And later, President Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "Without God, there could be no American form of government or way of life. Recognition of the Supreme Being is the first and most basic expression of Americanism," unquote. Our national leaders of yesterday's generation have led us and taught us the indispensable need and value to put our trust in God Himself. And so tonight we boldly affirm our national motto, "In God We Trust." History has clearly taught us that no one is secure in his or her own accomplishments. It is only trust in God that produces lasting security. And so it is in this spirit that we pray this invocation tonight. We acknowledge your gracious guiding hand in our land and in our beautiful city of Arroyo Grande. We ask your blessing and enablement upon our mayor and the members of our city council. We have freely elected our fellow citizens, our friends, to serve us on our city council. And as such, we assume our responsibility daily to pray for.
Thank you very much, Pastor. And Mr. Howell and Ms. Clayton, you know better than to rush off without bringing us up to speed on the VFW and the good work that you do.
We had our flag day with the American Legion today, and we burnt the colors that were no longer usable, and in the fall we're looking forward now and making plans for Veterans Day. We hope you all will attend when it comes on November the 11th, and that's all we have with the summer months coming. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Okay, before we get into item five, special presentations, I did want to make a quick announcement. I was tardy to this meeting for very good reason. Many of you have been following the, I guess I can term it a crisis in Zone 11A, the flood control district, and the county's desire to turn it over to DWR, which would have resulted in monumental assessments for our agriculture, for our residents on fixed incomes down there. So I was at the Board of Supervisors meeting today. The matter came before the board. I want to thank the board and particularly Supervisor Shajan for his leadership and support. We were able to get a 5-0 vote to delay the relinquishment for a one-year period. So we are very pleased with that. I walked out of the Board of Supervisors chambers at about 10 after 6. So it was a race to get here. There'll be more on that a little bit later on. The real work is now going to begin on that issue, and it's certainly going to involve the city. Okay, with that, that will take us to item number 5, special presentations, and we do have a very special one this evening, and I'll step down from the dais to make this presentation. One thing about becoming an Eagle Scout, you read your cues. See, I didn't even have to invite you up here. You were already up here. But we do have the pleasure this evening of recognizing Levitt Woodland for attaining the rank of Eagle Scout. And Levitt, it's my pleasure to present an honorary proclamation to you, and I'm going to read it in its entirety. This is not something that happens every day. Whereas the Boy Scouts of America, since its founding in 1910, has been the preeminent organization for instilling positive values in its youth membership, and whereas approximately 2% of all Boy Scouts nationwide attain the rank of Eagle Scout, and whereas good citizenship, character development, physical fitness, and service to others are qualities promoted by the Boy Scout program and are demonstrated in both attitude and action of Eagle Scouts. And whereas Troop 234 of Arroyo Grande, California, is honoring one of its very own members, Levitt Woodland, who has attained the rank of Eagle Scout, Levitt's Eagle Leadership Project was assembling 75 awards, if you'd like.
Thanks. I'd like to thank everyone for the opportunity of having me here. Really glad I got my Eagle Scout. It was good experience. Taught me leadership, and along with quite a few other things. So. Very glad I got in. Thank you for all having me here.
Okay. That will take us to item 6, agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the audience to come forward and comment on items that are not, let me repeat that, not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not published on the agenda. We would ask members of the audience to limit their comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Are there any members of the audience that would like to come forward during public comment period or community comments? Okay. We'll close community comments and suggestions. This will take us to item 8, the consent agenda. Let me ask a question, Kelly. I see you wanting to slide it over to Tim. Maybe you're anticipating the question.
The city manager was supposed to discuss the issue with you. Are you talking about public comment?
I am. Okay. Are we at that point, or is that something that's going to happen the next meeting? Or do we need to bring that forward to the council to make a determination if that's what we want to do on our agenda? Yeah. For the benefit of the audience, on consent agenda, as you well know, this is generally a group of items that we approve in one motion, and we typically do not allow public comment or comment on the consent agenda, but we're one of the few bodies that does not do that. So we're considering moving that into our procedures. And so that's why this gave me pause to see whether or not we were there yet.
We are technically there. If you could open that up to public comment, that would be great. It is considered an agenda item, and under the Brown Act, all agenda items are open to public comment. So we're going to start that practice effective immediately, if it's okay with you, Mr. Mayor.
It's okay with me, if it's okay with the rest of the council.
We've actually added some wording under the consent agenda instructions to clarify that to folks. I guess there was also some discussion about maybe impacting the later public communications, which we don't think
right.
It should.
Okay. Well, we can discuss that at a later time.
Okay.
All right. Then I think probably what we will do with the consent agenda, and we're talking on the agenda with consent items 8A. C. Any others? All right. If there are no others, then I will entertain a motion for approval of agenda items 8A through 8N, with the exception of 8C.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anything in there?
Yes, two ordinances. I'll read them.
We got one in there, I think.
There's
two in there.
Two ordinances in there.
Item AF is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending Section 2.28.050D of the Rio Grande Municipal Code regarding the meetings of Senior Advisory Commission. And then we also have 8G, which is an ordinance entitled An Ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande repealing, amending, and adding provisions to Titles 8, 9, 12, and 15 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on consent items? If not, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. All right. That takes us back to 8C. Mayor Pro Tem?
Mr. Mayor, I have a conflict of interest with 8C in that I live within one of the two tracks involved, so I will step down from the council at this point.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem has recused himself from 8C on the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
There is a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 9, public hearings, and we have a bunch of them tonight. 9A, consideration of development code amendment, case number 05-008. The applicant is Gary White. The location is 1400 West Branch.
Mayor, members of the council, this item was continued from a previous meeting to this evening, and as such, we provided a staff report indicating that the alterations that were made to the site plan to respond to council suggestions produced an incomplete grading and retaining wall plan, and therefore we advise the applicant that it would be inappropriate to have the hearing this evening.
It was noticed. Is there any member of the audience that is here this evening to address 9A? If so, we will take public comment on 9A. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment on 9A. And do you need a motion to postpone this?
Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I might ask, I'm going to be out of state on the 12th, so I'd ask that we continue this item till the second meeting in July, if possible.
Okay.
I'm going to miss that one.
Summertime is rough.
That's the only one I'm going to be missing this whole summer.
Well, how about if we look at a date uncertain, keeping in mind schedules for the council? Would that work? Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion that we continue consideration of Development Code Amendment Case Number 05-008, Tentative Parcel Map Case Number 05-003, and Conditional Use Permit Case Number 04-009, Applicant Gary White, Location 1400 West Branch Street, to a date uncertain.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes, thank you. That takes us to 9B. This is a continued public hearing, consideration of the 2005 water and sewer rate study and resolutions establishing new water and sewer rates and the new Lopez contract charges.
Good evening, excuse me. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. This evening, we'd like to present the 2005 water and sewer rate study for your consideration. The study is an update of the previous report that was prepared in 2003 and was prepared to address funding for capital improvement projects during the next 4 years. The study before you this evening includes a water conservation rate structure for residential customers. This type of rate structure, which is being used in almost every other city in the county, whether it be a two-block rate structure or a five-rate structure, most cities are using some type of inclining block rate structure, is being proposed this evening in an effort to reduce consumption and delay the purchase of additional increments of water. The study also includes proposed changes in the method in which the Lopez charges are determined for each of the user classifications. The presentation will outline the proposed rate structures, the rate adjustments for the next 4 years, and provides tables showing the rates for each user classification. With that brief introduction, I will now introduce Clayton Tuckfield to my left. Clayton is responsible for preparing the study for us this evening and has a PowerPoint presentation.
As well as operation and maintenance expense and the other obligations. We'll then talk about rate structures, the water system, and the sewer system. And then lastly, part of the study was also to look at the Lopez fund charges. And we'll look at that at the very last item. For the water system, there's approximately 6,000 accounts. These accounts are billed bi-monthly. We have a service charge by meter size, and then we also have a uniform volume charge where all water is currently charged at the same price. Annual water sales are about 3,400 acre feet last year, fiscal year 04. We currently have debt service payments that we make out of the water system, about $116,000 per year, and we're in good shape on our financial reserves. We've got about $2.2 million in the bank for the water fund. Some of the major capital improvements that we're looking at include the reservoir number one. We're going to spend about $1.9 million on that project this fiscal year. It's going to be wrapping up, I suppose. Reservoir number six construction will begin in 05-06 through 07-08. Cost about $920,000. The Fair Oaks waterline upgrade, 8-inch to 12-inch size, is going to cost about $645,000 in 08-09. We have a connection, a pressure zone connection for two zones, Rancho Grande to Oro Zone, was cost us about $550,000 in 06 through 06, 07, about a two-year plan there. The total cost of the program is going to run about $6.7 million from now to 08, 09. Now, our plan to finance those projects as well as meet the other obligations of the water fund The good news, well, the good news is we don't need to issue any new debt, but we can't. We have the money available in cash, as I mentioned, $2.2 million, to fund the projects as well as a variety of other sources. But the money that we're talking about, the coming out of the water fund, we can pay with cash. But it does need to raise the rates to meet O&M. The water transfer is going to make to pay for the capital and debt service coverage ratios that you have based on the old debt of $116,000 I mentioned earlier. So to do that, the rate increases look like as follows. July 1, 2005, a 5% increase. Now, City Council already adopted that 5% increase the last time we did this study, so it's already going to be in place. In the future, though, we're going to look at 7% increases beginning each July 1 in the future years here. So our fund balance, which was $2.2 million, we're going to draw that down to $916,000, and that helps us to avoid any debt service payments or issuing new debt to pay for projects. The $916,000 is still above the city policy on what we keep in reserves for the water fund, so we're still in good shape on that. Graphically, this is what the picture looks like. Fiscal year 05, the capital represents the yellow portion. The light blue is the operation and maintenance expense. The red line is our current rates and the revenue we generate from that. And the green line is what will the revenue will look like if we implement the rate increases we're talking about. So in the first year, you can see the yellow is above the red line and the green line. That means we're drawing down some of the fund balance to pay for the capital. And as we move through 06, 07, we're meeting our obligations. And in the last couple of years, we're drawing down the fund balance again. That's why I said we went from 2.2 to 916, but we're still able to meet all of our obligations. So this is a more or less a levelized plan to get us where we want to go, which is to pay for the projects, meet our obligations, and meet our debt service coverage at a kind of uniform rate increase. Increase in proportion to the percentages we talked about, as does the volume charges. So ultimately, we go from $1.06 to about $1.29 in the last year. If we implement that structure, the typical bills that we'll see next year for most single-family customers, the first two columns there, on existing rates, the average volume that single families use is 32 CCF per bi-month. So your bill would be $40.52. Now, when we implement the new rates on this structure, the bill will be $42.52, so a $2 increase if you use the average, which is 32. To compare that with what other cities are paying in the county here, we've got a list of about 10 other cities or districts. Arroyo Grande is shown at the top, $90.58. That includes the Lopez meter charges in addition to the rates I showed you on the previous slide, just to be able to compare with what everybody else is paying. Now, what that shows you is that you're less than San Luis Obispo, you're less than the city of Lompoc, and you're less than Morro Bay. So you're still in the ballpark reasonably as far as water rates go. Another alternative we looked at was water conservation rates. Instead of the uniform charge, we looked at conservation rates, which include inclining block rates. Now, the idea of the conservation structure is to send price signals to the consumer to achieve efficiency in supplying our resources. In other words, what we want to do is try to avoid getting the next increment of supply somewhere because it's going to cost more money. So this water conservation rate structure encourages efficient water use and hopefully reduce the consumption. And what we're going to see is we're going to see higher prices in higher blocks, meaning that we're going to set up a block rate, first 10, first 20, first 30, this kind of an idea. And as we use more and more water, you'll pay higher and higher prices. Now, typically these blocks are set at residential averages, meaning the indoor average or the average consumption for the class or some average that the more residential class would use. So keeping that in mind, the next slide I'll show what the block points are. We're proposing a four-block residential rate structure. The first block would be 0 to 12, 100 cubic feet, set at 96 cents per 100 cubic feet. And this typically represents the indoor use of a single family home. The next block would be 13 to 3200 cubic feet, set at $1.06. And that 32 is the average consumption for the single family class. I'm going to jump to the fourth block. And the reason I do that is because what we want to do in the fourth block is capture 10% of the consumption of the single family class and that average, and that amount is 64 CCF. And then the third block is falls out between the second and the fourth. So the idea is that we're setting blocks to be averages, indoor, the average, and then 10% of the usage, and the third block falls out. Now, the multifamily has a similar structure, but they have a different average for the month. I think it's 20. But the main point here is we're kind of discussing the structure. But it's a similar type structure. So this is what the rates would look like if we go to conservation. In the first year, 05-06, as you saw from the previous slide, we got 96 cents for the first 12, $1.06 to the next 20, $1.20 to the next 32, and then over 64 would be at $1.04-05. Had a lot of rainfall this January, February. And so what I'm going to suggest is this requires management of the revenue stream. So we need to be conscious of the fact that pricing is difficult on a wet year, and we should watch how revenues come in. And I think we're going to be okay. We've done the planning for this, so I believe the numbers are good. Now, under the conservation rate structure, this should be the typical bills that you would see and how it compares to the existing structure as well as the proposed uniform rate structure. So the first column we saw before, at an average of 32, we have $40.52. And as we saw on the proposed rate structure with the increase, we had $40.52. But under conservation rate structure, we would see a charge of $41.32. So it's slightly lower, and that's because you get lower prices in the early blocks, but you get higher prices in the higher blocks. So if you look all the way down the chart to, say, 500 cubic feet, the charge is going to be $711 versus $538. So the point being that as you use more water, the higher the price, the monthly bill gets higher as well. And that's the purpose of conservation rate structures. Moving on to wastewater. There are a couple changes in the report. I believe you have new copies of the tables on your agenda items. This presentation reflects those changes. So if you don't see it in the report, you'll see it on those pages. But we have approximately 5,900 accounts in the wastewater. These are billed bi-monthly as well, and they are based on metered water consumption with the service charge monthly. We have no debt service payments in wastewater. We had financial reserves of $90,000 beginning 04-05. Now, that's below the target balance we wanted to have set up by city policy of the finance department. But as you see, as we go forward, we're going to put money in the bank, and eventually we're going to get there. Major projects in the wastewater fund, sewer fund, include sewer lift station number one, about $630,000 in 05-06. The Fair Oaks sewer upgrade, $535,000 in 05-06. And the Ash Street sewer upgrade, $246,000 in 07-08. So the total cost of the program is $3.3 million from now till fiscal year 08-09. And similar to the water fund, the sewer fund, we're financing all the projects out of sewer fund cash transfers. There's only $218,000 of money being spent, but the project costs were much more than that. So we can see there's other sources that are helping to pay for the sewer project. So this is a small amount that's actually coming out of the sewer fund. But we still have additional increases. Now, as we saw just in water, we hadn't previously adopted a rate increase. We had the same thing here. July 105, the 10% was already approved by council the last time we did the study, and that's going to go into effect. Going future from there, we're looking at 3% increase. So this is much more manageable than we saw in the water fund. And our fund balance will increase from $90,000 to $468,000, which is very close to the target balance we set up by the finance department city policy. So we're going to get there. We're just doing it in a very slow, efficient manner. Graphically, this is the same picture, not the same picture, but what the sewer fund will look like. In 04-05, we got a little bit of money we're taking out of the fund, but we put it all back in 07-08-09. So the reason the green line is above the columns is because money's going into the. And our typical bills under the structure, this is for fiscal year, next fiscal year, 05-06, you currently would be paying $14.02. That bill will go to $15.40, so for $1.38 increase per by month. On average. Now, comparing your wastewater rates to other local communities, you are the next to the lowest. Only Oceano is less than you, so this is very good news for the city of Rio Grande. So even with the increase of 10%, you're still next to the lowest. Now, if you implement the water conservation rates, since the wastewater charters are billed based on water consumption, if you use less water on the water side, that means you have to raise the rates on the sewer side to get the same revenue into the fund. So what you'll see here, we start off with the 31 cents as we did before, but we go to 42 cents by the end of 08-09. So it's really an increase of about 2 cents per 100 cubic feet and will help us to achieve the same revenue goals on the wastewater side. So our example bills under the conservation rates for wastewater, we were at $14.02. That will increase to $16.04. So it's not much more of an increase over what we were paying if you kept the existing rates in place for the water side, existing rate structure. As I mentioned earlier, part of the study was to look at the Lopez Fund charges. The reason we looked at this was a couple of reasons. One is because the flood control district is incurring additional debt for the remediation project, and that's causing all the charges to go up for all the member agencies, and this is quite extensive increase in the charges, and I'll show you what those are on the next slide. Also, we wanted to modify what's called the additional unit charge that customers get paid, get charged to better reflect what they actually pay in consumption. And you'll see that when we get to the existing rates, what I'm talking about there. This is the Lopez Fund projected cash flow. In 04-05, that's per the city's budget. Let's look at line 4. If you look at line 4, in 05-06, at $1,721,000, and then look at fiscal year 08-09, it goes to $3.3 million. So it almost doubles. And these are figures given to the city by the flood control district. So that in order to meet those obligations, our revenue has to go from $2.1 million to $3.5 million into the fund to be able to keep making the payments to the flood control district. Now, these are the existing rates that's currently in place. So the charges are by meter size. We have inside and outside city rates. If you look at the bottom, I said additional unit charges. You can see that all of the customers except for convalescent homes have the same additional unit charge, $20.55, even though customer classes typically have different consumption levels. So we wanted to recognize the consumption levels as well as plan for the additional expenses. In order to do that, this is what the results are. If you look at the first year, 05-06, the charge would go from the $20.55 to the $24 mentioned. Increases to $39.69 by fiscal year 08-09, and that's to reflect the increasing expenses that the county, the control district is going to charge the city. If there's any other questions I can answer, I'd be happy to do so.
If I could just add a couple comments before we get into questions. Two things. One, I want to mention on the proposed changes to the Lopez charge, that was in response to a number of complaints we've actually received in terms of the fairness of our current structure. Primarily, we have mobile home residents and residents of apartment buildings, multifamily developments that are essentially now paying the same flat charge as single family residents. And so that's a hardship on them, particularly when they're using a much lower use of water. So we kind of studied a couple different options, and this seemed to work the best as far as making the system more fair, but not having the fees change so drastically that it was going to result in major changes customers' bills. The second thing I just wanted to mention real quickly is in terms of the goals of the tiered water rate structure, and this is something Clayton has mentioned several times to me, so maybe ask if he wants to add on to it, but The purpose of the tiered rate structure is to reduce water usage, but the experience has been in terms of success of that is it's effective in reducing water usage when it's part of an overall water conservation program. So when it's one item within an overall program that includes public education and the retrofit program and the other things that we're offering, those are the programs when it's been shown to be effective. Just raising rates by itself and not doing anything else think the experience is much less effective. I don't know if you want to add.
Yeah,
add
I would agree with what he said. That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Any other staff comments? Don, anything? Okay. All right, this is an opportunity for the council to ask questions or seek clarification in the staff report.
If I may?
Sure. Go right ahead, please.
If I may, we talk about the average single-family residential consumption at about 32 CCF. What is our high and our low?
A low would be zero in case somebody goes out of town on vacation or whatever, but the high, as I'm recalling, was about 800 cubic feet.
800?
Yeah, there was one bill that had 800, yeah.
Thank you. That's it. I was just wondering why our chart went up to 500, but we actually do have...
There are some customers that use, I think, it was 800.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Mayor Pro Tem?
Just a quick question. In terms of the debt service that we're paying for the water fund, I see that stays constant throughout the entire length of our projection here. What's the debt we're servicing, and what was it for, and how is it being reduced, and when do we see that?
The debt completion discussion is in the report, page 11. Looks like it's a 1993 revenue refunding issue. To refund some amounts to
financing.
We looked at the five-year average of the water consumption by customer class. So it's the averages per customer or per account that we're using and apply that to our existing accounts. So single-family account, we're assuming there's 50 new houses being built a year. So as the number of houses go up, you apply the usage per account to that, and that gives you the volume that we're going to project. So it's the five-year average, I think, is what your answer to your question is.
So for your financing and for the purposes, but you actually didn't assume any conservation, only
No.
Continued average.
When you get the conservation rate structure, then what you look at is you make an estimate of what the reduction in demand is going to be based on the prices. That's called the price elasticity of demand. And like I said, it's difficult to predict because we've had a wet year, and we don't know exactly what the elasticity is for the city because we haven't had a demand forecast, but... we make estimates and we make engineering judgment and apply that to the volume. So,
and that's the number I'm interested in. Okay. What number did you end up with there?
It's about a 2% reduction in volume.
So only 2%. Okay. All right.
Was that it? Okay. Councilmember Arnold.
I didn't have any questions right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I thought you said you did. Okay. Well, I have a couple of... general questions. And I think I've stated earlier, and it still goes tonight, and I'll explain more during council comments, but I have a real issue with the tiered water rate. And my question is with regard to the tiered water rate. I saw in your report that you had something in there that referenced Tucson, Arizona, I think, as it being relatively successful, I guess, 3% consumption reduction. My question, and I discussed it with Steve earlier, was whether or not we've had similar successes locally here with a tiered water rate.
You know, I had an opportunity today to talk to some of the other agencies that have these tiered rates. Atascadero Mutual Water Company does have a five-tiered rate system. They seem to think that they do have a reduction in consumption. They don't know exactly what the quantity is. They think it's somewhere less than 5%, but they do think that they feel that they have a reduction. The other cities that have a two-block rate system aren't really they don't have a real gauge on how much they're saving at this moment. So around the county, there's a feeling that there is some savings, but it's not quantifiable at this point. But at least those were the comments that I got today when I talked to some of the agencies.
And Atascadero is an independent purveyor. Is that
I'm sorry, what was that?
Tascadero Mutual is an independent water purveyor.
Yes, they are.
Okay. On the looking at the scale between now and 08, 09, let me ask a question that's based on rollback.
I would not expect that. Typically, what you would see is that there will be ongoing future capital projects that are not identified right at this point. The city would probably make a water master plan or wastewater sewer plan, and in that would be a 30-year plan of what those projects would be. So what we identify is the first five-year period is what projects we can quantify and say these are the ones we want to build, but yet there are still future ones 25 years out that still need to be constructed as growth occurs in the city or whatever the master plan says. So would we actually replenish the cash we draw down? No. I mean, replace that? The answer would be probably not. We have financial policies we've set in place as far as what balance we want to maintain in the fund. I think the reason we had such a high balance in the water fund right now is because we were going to pay for reservoir number one a couple of years ago with cash. We didn't quite do that. We kept it in the fund. So that money was always there to pay for the reservoir number one, I believe. So we're now just bringing it back down to what the policy was. But I think in the future you'll still see inflationary increases in the water fund and the wastewater fund to meet as O&M expenses and any debt service you might incur.
Okay. Thank you. Those were all my questions. Any other questions in the staff report? Okay. Seeing none, this is a public hearing. Any member of the audience who would like to come forward on 9B, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. No one? Okay. We'll close public hearing portion of 9B and bring this back to the council. Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you start this one?
I guess my mind, this ends up being kind of a pay me now or pay me later thing, being that we're currently sitting at about 95% of our water availability and we are only at 80% of our projected population. I think down the road we're either going to have to go out and buy new water and pay a significantly higher price than we have in the past for it and therefore wage water rates to pay that, or we're going to come up with some sort of a plan that revalues our current water to build that in. I will say I'm a little disappointed here that we think we're only going to get 2% of this, since we really, I calculate, have to gain about 20% in order not to have to go out and buy additional resources. My experience in Santa Barbara, where we went through a much, much more severe crisis than this, was the tiered rate worked great, but they had significantly higher tiers. They had, it was 100% for the second load, 200% for the second, 400 and 600% going from there, and it was very effective. In fact, it was so effective that when they got on the other side of it, they didn't have enough money to run the water department. In fact, had bought additional supplies as well, and therefore had to raise everybody's rates because nobody, even when they lowered the rates back down, everyone had made permanent reductions in their water use. So I guess what I would look at going forward, I'm certainly in favor of supporting the tiered system we have here, but I do think going forward, if we're successful, we have to be prepared to build that in. That somewhere down the road, even the base rates would have to go up because we have to collect the same funds out of 80% of the water if we're going to be successful. Otherwise, we're going to have to go out and raise everybody's rate to buy new water. So I do hope, I certainly would be in favor of the tiered system. We certainly have to give it a try. It would be good to know if it was going to work before we got right up against the wall that we are now, but rates that are proposed here. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor. I've looked at the tiered rate as opposed to our current system, and I think that what we have before us is a pretty good compromise. I'm skeptical as to whether or not the tiered rate is actually going to provide the adequate incentives for folks to actually move forward and conserve. I think those that do it already. The fiscal rewards are not there. I think that Councilmember Guthrie is right in regards to, if we're really going to utilize the system, we probably need to have greater percentages. And yet I wouldn't support that because I don't think that's really the mode of operation that we need to implement here in Arroyo Grande. It seems to me that system is really a penal system, and I would rather do more of a education and try to work with folks to do what's right with the resources that we have to begin with. So I think that what we have before us is a good compromise. I think that it will allow some rewards financially for those who are doing what they're doing already, conserving, and probably allowing those that would like to conserve more to at least get some fiscal benefit from doing that. And those that continue to use lots of water, they're going to pay for it. Hopefully that will be a deterrent. So I'm in favor of moving forward with the tiered rate system. And I don't see this system being a major penalty. It's not significantly different. We're not going to see major changes from what our current system is all about. And we do need to look at our future capital projects and how we're going to be funding those. In regards to the other items that are presented here, the sewer rates, I think those are equitable. And I think it is important that we look at equity with our Lopez meter charges as well. So I'm pleased the staff has brought that forth so that we can provide some relief to those who are paying the same amount that single-family residential is using. So in regards to the staff report, I can support this report as presented.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I too can support this as proposed. I am a little disheartened to hear the 800 number. It's a little discouraging that anyone other than maybe if they're running a kind of a farm operation is using that kind of water. I don't have a lot of faith that this is actually going to result in a lot of conservation, but the flip side of that is then it will raise more money, which will allow us to develop new sources. So either way, it should benefit the city in the long run. I would be interested in possibly coming back to this in about a year and looking and seeing what were the results and possibly adding maybe a fifth category that was more punitive somewhere. I right now I don't have a number. I'd like to look at where if the 800.
This is an issue where we're balancing both sides of the equation. In general, I support the tiered structure. I think that what we have in front of us tonight is an excellent start. I'm not sure that I want to use the word punitive, but I think that this will be, in this coming year, that it was relatively a wet one. We have a chance to ease into this and get people used to the fact that there might be a tiered structure. We have had a wet year. We were at 97% of our water consumption for the past year. We're getting very close to being out of water. So I think that as time progresses, we may need to become much more aware, much more conscious in terms of water conservation as a city and as individuals. In that we have a tiered structure in mind, one of the things I've been very concerned about was making sure that large families were not penalized. And the structure I see before me doesn't seem to do that. A reasonable family using a reasonable amount of water, even though they might be slightly on the higher side, are not going to be up into the really high tiers at this point. So I'm satisfied with what I see. I, too, would like to see this revisited in a year and perhaps on an annual basis. Let's check in and see how it's going. So I think that it's a positive step. The measures that are before us represent, on the whole, when you take all of the elements together, the water charges, the sewage charges, and Lopez contract charges, represent a net increase of about 10 to 11% a year for the next 4 years. I brought my water bill with me tonight, and I took a look at what I'd be paying based on the exact same usage in 4 years, and it struck me that it was about 45%. The bill would be 45% higher 4 years from now in 2008, 2009 than it is today based on the increases that we have in front of us. When you take a look at it like that, well, you know, that's a significant change. And it is, but it's a gradual, about a 10%, 11% increase per year. However, we go back to one of the reasons we're doing this. Well, we're almost out of water, and water is expensive, and we want to encourage people to use less. Our sewage rates, though, are a relatively small portion of this, and the increases to them are small. The largest increase in this is actually the increase that I see for the Lopez contract. I was wondering if maybe I could ask a question at this point. And why do we see increases of 17% this year, 21% next year, 23% year after that? Why is that such a large structure?
I think that's a direct result of some of the projects we've just completed. The retrofit project was a $28 million project. We have plans that are going to go out to bid for the update of the treatment plant, which is $20 million. So the combination of those is the direct result of
this. This is capital improvements to the system is essentially what we're paying for.
Yes.
Okay. So those aren't optional. Those are things we need to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
Given that, and given the things I see before me, I don't particularly care for the large increase at the end of 4 years, but I see it.
Can I make one more comment before you?
Sure.
There's just one item that was in the staff report that we didn't come out in the presentation. I want to make sure everyone's aware of so there's no misconceptions or expectations in terms of implementation. We do have an issue with our current utility billing software, and so we're not actually going to be able to implement the new tier, if approved, until the new software is installed, which we're in the process of doing. We will implement the new system based on the direction of council as soon as we can. Yeah, our projection is it could be as late as March 1st, though, so I wanted you to know that. We're discouraged about that because we'd like to see the results of any changes as soon as possible. The upside of that, though, is it does give us more time, and we're just really gearing up on our public education program. So it does give us more time for public education before any changes in the rates take place based on what the council action is this evening.
Okay, thank you. Was that it, Mayor Pro Tem?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
On that. Are you going to, if we did go with the tiered structure, are you going to go with the other proposal in the interim, or are we just going to be 6 months?
Yeah, I just thought about that. I should have clarified that. The increases that have already been approved prior under the existing rate structure would still take effect. It's the change to the tiered rate that we cannot implement until the new utility billing system is fully operational. Thank you for asking that question.
Okay, my turn. Don, I have to ask a question. When you talked to Atascadero Mutual Water Company, did they indicate to you that there was, when they implemented their tiered rate, was there, said that there was kind of a general feeling, gut level, that there was some positive effect from that?
That's correct. And, you know, I forgot to mention that I did get a copy of a study that was done by the American Water Works Association, which I had discussed with them. And in this particular study that they did, you know, nationwide, there was a 2.6% savings. And so most of the literature that's out there within the state from the California Urban Water Council or from the American Public Workers Association always indicate, all of them indicate a somewhat of a savings, but they also say that there's an education program and other things that have to happen as well, which is what we're doing as well. So that's why they felt so positive about their savings.
You know, I find this interesting, and this isn't the first time that I've seen it occur. The reason why I have such pause with these kinds of measures, and I'm sorry, but I personally have to put a punitive label on them. And it comes back down to, you know, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. Even if we're successful with conservation programs, so much so that that there is a material reduction, then our revenue stream is negatively affected. And people are ultimately penalized across the board for conserving water. Because the bottom line for today, I'm going to support this, with the caveat that I heard come from Mayor Pro Tem and also from Councilmember Arnold. I would like us to be the jurisdiction that monitors this program. I would like some hard facts to come back that gives us an indication as to whether or not this program is having a material effect on consumption or not. And I don't know how we do that, but it's only with that caveat that I would support this tonight and vote to implement it. I want to make a general observation for these types of programs, and I've talked to Steve about it, and I think one of the reasons why I continue to be concerned about any kind of a tiered rate system is because I equate this primarily to something that we see happening today that's affecting all of us, and that's how much it costs to drive into a gas station and fill up our tanks. Many years ago, the administration at the time decided that they were going to deregulate the oil companies, and as a result of that, they based their decision on the notion that they would let market forces dictate consumption. So if you had a fuel shortage, the prices would automatically go up, and as a result of that, people would drive less. I think today what we see is that people are not buying fewer SUVs. They're not buying fewer toys. All we need to do is look at our own coastline, which I guess is a good thing for us. We have a lot of people who come in and use our beaches and other facilities in the area, but they consume a lot of fuel. What they've done is make decisions within their own economic circle, if you will, as to what else is going to sacrifice, but they still buy fuel. The only people getting rich in this are the oil companies. Consumption of fuel has not gone down because the price at the pump has gone up. If anything, it's increased. So there you have market forces. In the case of the situation that Councilmember Guthrie indicated, I can see where that would have an effect. If it's so draconian that people have to make a decision as to whether or not they're going to water their lawn or put food on their table, that's a very simple choice. But that's essentially the degree that it had to go to before it worked. At least I'm assuming that if they went up that much, that for some people it had that kind of an effect. So I have a real issue with this. The other thing, and I've really been pondering as to whether or not I should even mention this, but I think the council needs to, at some point, take a look at where we are in relation to our build-out population. Nobody wants to talk about it. I think it needs to be discussed. We have a build-out population of 20,000 people. We've talked many times during our general plan discussions and deliberations about living within our means of growth. The general plan build-out population was not just pie in the sky, and it was not just an arbitrary target. It was a population that we can support with our resources and still maintain quality of life for our city. It's time, I think, that we check in on that and seriously take a look at where we are in terms of build-out. So, once again, with the caveat of monitoring the tiered rate structure, which I'm hoping whoever makes the motion will include it, and checking back in so that we can make a determination as to whether or not it's working in conjunction with an educational program or whether it truly is punitive and we're not making any headway, I'll support this reluctantly tonight. Those are my comments. If there's nothing else, I will entertain that motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande establishing water and sewer rates and charges, adopting the conservation rate structure with yearly usage monitoring.
I'll second that with the understanding that it's a year from March when it actually implements that we're going to come back and look at it. I'll second.
Okay. Does that address it? Tim, I see you getting ready to.
If I could just stick my big nose in just for a second. I think the hope is to implement it as soon as we have the billing software. If we have a date specific like March, we're rigging it to March. So maybe if we could just use the wording effective as soon as feasible, that would at least give the opportunity to bring it forth quicker.
Well, I think what we're doing is suggesting that the motion be modified so that we get a status report approximately a year after implementation, whenever that is. Would that be acceptable?
I'll modify it as such.
Okay. Does that work?
Yes.
That does.
Is the second still hold? Roll call, please.
Mr. Mayor, discussion?
I'm sorry. Go ready.
Just for clarification purposes, I think we're talking about two separate things. One is that the effectiveness of the new rate study would actually be done as soon as the software is up and running and ready to go. I think what you're discussing is actually bringing it back to council for the purpose of monitoring to see how it's functioning. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. I think that was the intent of the motion.
Okay. Just thank you.
Anything else?
No.
If there's no other discussion, roll call.
Was there another comment there, Tim?
I just need to clarify for the record. The actual motion and the recommendation included language relative to March 1st, and I was hoping March 1st of 2006 that we could avoid a date specific because it's quite possible we could bring back the software sooner. That was the clarification I was planning on making. They're actually functionally linked because until we implement it, we can't really provide the data that the council is looking for.
I think that's what they're.
I think we're on the same page now.
Okay.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, if I could interject before we go on to the next item, we received some written comments and some other material. If I could request a 10-minute recess to review this material before we open up our next item.
Are you okay with that? Council Member Dickens has requested a 10-minute recess, which we will take at this time. All set, Kelly? All set? Okay, Council will reconvene. Just for your information, we've just been advised by the police chief there was a 7.0 earthquake that occurred just a few minutes ago, I guess, off of the coast of Northern California, offshore of Crescent City. So we're looking, I guess everyone's looking now for potential for a tsunami up in that area. According to the chief, it was 90 miles offshore. So it'll be interesting to see what the analysis is on that. But you'll probably hear it on the news, and we don't have any other information right now. So just to let you know. All right, that takes us to back to our public hearings. We're at 9C, consideration of vesting tentative tract map case number 04-004, planned unit development case number 04-001. The applicant is DB&M Properties.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As background, this project was originally submitted in 2001 as a conditional use permit and subdivision map to remove all existing structures and develop a mixed-use complex consisting of about 31,000 square feet of commercial space and 4,000 square feet of residential floor area. Through the environmental review process, it was determined that the main Loomis residence is eligible for listing with the state as a historic resource, and then the grain warehouse serves as an important feature of the setting for the main house. Removal of these structures was therefore considered a significant, unavoidable impact, requiring overriding considerations to approve the project. Council certified the final EIR in September of 2003, and the applicant later submitted a revised project. The property is located within the Village Mixed Use Zoning District. The current project is very similar to last year's pre-application. Proposed is a tract map to reconfigure 23 underlying lots into 13 lots and a planned unit development to create a mixed-use complex that retains existing structures and develops the remaining area with a three-story, 12,000-square-foot commercial building and then 12 residential duplexes. The existing warehouse and two residences would also have the potential to convert to commercial uses, although plans for any type of conversion is not currently being sought right now. Primary access to the commercial development is from Crown Hill, and the residences have access from either LaPointe Street or from Crown Terrace, depending on where they're situated on the project site. Two of the residential units would be restricted to the moderate income level per the 2003 housing element. The proposed density is within development code requirements for the Village Mixed Use District. This slide shows all four elevations for the three-story commercial structure. The building height is approximately 32 feet, measured from average grade under the building to the top of the clear-story architectural feature. Proposed colors and materials are consistent with the design guidelines for historic districts, and the architectural design is considered a mix between Craftsman and California Bungalow. A two-story parking lot is proposed with access from both Crown Terrace and then at ground level. Pedestrian access is provided from Crown Terrace down to the project site. And these are the elevations for the eight condominium units proposed adjacent to the commercial structure. Each structure is two stories with separate residential units. The four units on the upper level are accessed from Crown Terrace. Then the other four units are accessed from down at project grade level. The other residential units are dispersed at grade level along LaPointe Street and the creek and are two stories. Each has a secondary unit that's located above the garage. The conceptual landscape plan shows not only the type of plant species selected, but also various open space amenities adjacent to the creek. And then a rail bed gravel along the old Pacific Coast Railroad right-of-way in an effort to simulate and preserve that particular historic feature. An important feature or distinction between the original and revised project, besides retention of existing structures and a larger residential component, is that portions of the site have been sold off since the 2001 application. The site was originally roughly 3.5 acres in size, and then the applicant sold off the one-acre property to the west containing the existing office building and storage units and public comments. These changes and or concessions are listed in the staff report, and just as a summary, I'll just delineate a few of them. Downward slope driveways for the units along Crown Terrace for greater site distance and improved traffic safety. Retention of all previous additions to the warehouse, which consists of the side loading dock and the rear addition. That, by the way, eliminates six parking spaces. Provision of provision of pedestrian access between the warehouse and Loomis House from Grant Street to the proposed residences. Elimination of the controlled access gate between the residential and commercial areas. Elimination or modification of standards regulating streetlights or reduction in light intensity if that is the desire of the City Council. And provision of a scaled model, which is over on the side table, located over there. With retention of the side loading dock and rear addition to the warehouse, as I said, six parking spaces were forfeited, and parking for the project is therefore short by four spaces, or roughly 3% less than what is required per the development code. However, parking for the site is considered adequate per the development code, which allows up to a 20% parking reduction for mixed-use projects. In response to concerns of turning movement conflicts with Paulding School during certain peak times and traffic safety issues at the intersection of Crown Terrace and LaPointe Street, separate site access and stop sign warrant analyses were conducted by associated traffic engineers. The solution was to install a dedicated left turn pocket into the site from Crown Hill and then an all-way stop and other improvements, as you can see on the slide, at the Crown Terrace LaPointe Street intersection. These improvements are expected to provide improve site access conflicts, significantly slow down traffic, and provide much improved site distance. Because the revised project is less intensive than the original submittal, and because all structures are proposed to remain, particularly the Loomis residence, staff prepared an addendum to the final environmental impact report for the project instead of a supplemental EIR. Staff has also prepared a mitigation monitoring program, which includes applicable mitigation taken from the final EIR, as well as additional mitigation appropriate just specifically for the revised project. And I won't get into any of the details of the proposed mitigation measures except to emphasize that all the measures contained in the mitigation monitoring program are considered conditions of approval and must be implemented as conditions. So in conclusion, it is recommended the City Council consider an addendum to the certified EIR for the Creekside Mixed-Use Center and consider the project as amended since the April 19th Planning Commission meeting. If the council takes tentative action to either deny or approve the project, staff will return at a later meeting with a
had request, and then I noted that the items that the applicant was agreeing to. Was public access to the Creek Park one of those now? Because it didn't seem to be mentioned in the actual items on, I guess, it was page 3 of the staff report that they had agreed to, but then I kind of get the sense they might be agreeing to that now.
If it's not listed in the staff report, then they're not agreeing to it. If he wants to amend that, he would say so in his presentation.
Okay, and then the only other clarification right now, page 8 of the draft attachment 1.
Is your microphone on, Ed?
Oh, yes, it is. From the break. Sorry. Page 7, item 8 of draft, exhibit A, it mentions the access between the adjacent property to the west shall be provided to the city and accepted when the adjacent property owner agrees to. So basically, that's all it's saying is if and when the adjacent property owner agrees to access, then it would be dedicated, it'd be given to the city of the agreement, but there's no requirement that they actually ever have to get that access. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. That's all for now. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other questions? Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Kelly. First of all, just for clarification purposes, we received two different site, well, one's a site plan, I believe one's a grading or a plan.
Civil plans, yeah.
Civil plans. The civil plans are fairly old, and they're not reflective of the current proposal. There's several things that haven't been updated. At what point does the civil plans get updated to coincide with the proposal?
When they are submitted for improvement plans, unless directed otherwise by council to do it sooner.
When we talk about approving a vested tentative track map, it's not this vested tentative track map that's before us, that was given to us.
If directed by council to update that to coordinate with the site plan, then that's what the applicant would do. As far as the grading plan, you're talking mostly about the grading plans. The tentative tract map itself, the lots delineated, are not proposed to be changed. The grading plan may have to change.
It mainly deals with site layout and so forth is what I'm talking about. But my concern is that, you know, part of what we're looking at this evening is a consideration of a vested tentative track map. The vested tentative track map that I have has not been updated. That's my concern. I have a question regarding, and this Steve may answer this or whoever has knowledge. It's my understanding that there's been gone before the Traffic Commission the idea of putting a crosswalk at Crown Hill and at East Branch to help facilitate pedestrian access, primarily for Pauline Middle School. Can you give me an update of where that's at and what the problems are with that?
I believe we're still waiting for Caltrans. We determined Caltrans has to sign off on that. The exact status, though, I can't say. Is Don still here?
Come up in regards to a pedestrian access. We're putting in a number of units in this particular area. If this crosswalk is not approved by Caltrans, how do those folks who then move into this, if they have kids that are at middle school age, how do they actually get to Paulding safely?
The pedestrian traffic from the project to Paulding would not require a crossing. They could progress up Crown Hill to Crown Terrace and then cross the street at Crown Terrace or continue up Crown Hill. The sidewalk peters out on both sides of the street before you reach Paulding, and that was a commission concern and consideration, and they encouraged that Public Works attempt to implement a Safe Routes to School sidewalk installation program on Crown Hill as soon as possible, regardless of the outcome of the project. They feel that the gaps in the sidewalk on Crown Hill are detrimental.
Correct. And I know I've been sitting up here for 6 years, and we try and implement safe access to schools, and it hasn't happened yet for Pauling. And I think it needs to happen as part of this project. But those will be my comments later on. Circulation, Councilmember Arnold kind of alluded to this, and I think you've already answered my question, but circulation access to the neighboring property to the west at this point, there are no easements, and they're not, as part of the proposal before us, the applicant is not required to garner any easements to the west through the neighboring property. Is that correct?
That's how it's currently conditioned.
Some of the improvements that are being proposed to Crown Terrace, but at this point, there is no widening of Crown Terrace?
Crown Terrace will be improved with curb, gutter, and sidewalk on one side, the project side. There will be no parking on either side. It will be two 12-foot travel lanes.
So currently the road is 24 feet.
Yeah, the road actually meanders as far as its width is concerned. It's narrow in places and wider in other places.
Okay. And I think Councilmember Arnold also kind of alluded to this, but just for clarification, the proposed Creekside Park, is that considered in the proposal currently, is that private or public?
It's going to be private. It's being managed by a homeowners association. So as proposed, it's private.
In which case, if the homeowners association decided down the road to make sure that there was no other access besides any folks that were in the association, they could do so?
There is public access that is required.
Proposed left lane. You're talking about putting a left-hand turn lane on, I believe it would be Crown Hill, entering into the complex there. Is there an actual in our report here that shows what that turn lane is going to look like?
I do not have an exhibit for that at this time.
But we're looking at the possibility of maybe putting two cars in that lane?
Two cars for, yes, potentially three, but for sure two cars.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Pro Tem.
Kelly, could you bring back the slide that shows Crown, La Pointe, and the realignment?
Yeah, if you don't mind me going through
them
all.
That's fine. That'd be great.
Right there?
Yeah. Now, I'm trying to do this up line. So we're talking about restructuring this and reducing the size, reducing the width of the street there. That
is correct. Making it at a 90-degree angle.
And where were we talking about the stop sign?
I point to my screen, but that would be it. The stop signs are right there, as you can see, on the point. And the stop, it's an all-way stop, basically.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have for now.
Any other questions of the staff report or on the staff report? If not, then we will move to the public hearing portion of this, and we typically allow the applicant to go first.
Good evening. I'm Joe Bowd and Joseph Bowd and Associates. We're the design and planning firm that's been involved with this project for about 5.5 years. Staff identified some of the history of this, and I'd like to elaborate on that slightly. The first project, as you know, was to remove the barn and the two residences. That was through the EIR process. One of the residences was found to be potentially historical, and the barn being important to the setting. So we went back to the drawing boards after the EIR was certified. And in the meantime, of course, the city changed the zoning of the site to a mixed use. And so with that in mind, we put our thinking caps on and went ahead with more of a mixed use project, which is what's before you this evening, and was before you in the same configuration about a year ago at the pre-application meeting. We did go to pre-application meetings with this because we wanted to make sure that we understood all of the concerns and goals and expectations that might be expressed. We went to the staff advisory committee, we went to the ARC, we went to the Planning Commission and to the council. And we'd also had support letters from the Chamber of Commerce, and the one was continued with redesign concerns relative to the loading dock, and additional public comments were received. So with that, here's what we've done. We've redesigned this project through all of these pre-apps, staff comments, public comments, and Planning Commission meetings. We've retained the existing loading docks in their entirety. We've added the stop sign and crosswalk at La Pointe and Crown Terrace, reconfiguring that so that's a 90-degree intersection requiring all cars at all positions to stop before they proceed. Turn pocket at Crown Hill, and I might point out that the driveway into this project is not where it presently is located. It's moved up Crown Hill about 40 feet to enable the location of that turnpike, which could queue up probably three cars. Obviously, in the center turn lane of Branch, if someone sees that that turn pocket is already full, they're not going to make that turn. They can wait in the center two-way continuous turn lane on Branch Street. The traffic report for the EIR for the shopping complex and affirmed with the February 11th analysis identifies no loss of service. And I might point out, too, that Richard and Dwayne DeBlau and Jim Matthews, the property owners, are here, as well as Dan Dawson, who's the ATE traffic engineer. So any specific questions that you may have that I'm unable to answer, I appreciate you directing them to those gentlemen. One of the comments that the public mentioned and the Planning Commission discussed was the north side of LaPointe Street and the improvements, the north and west side, west of Crown Terrace. No one really was too keen on seeing sidewalks improved there. And we agree that that's probably unreasonable to have a sidewalk on the north side of LaPointe. However, there is a small portion of it because of the offset of that intersection that would have to have some sidewalk improvement.
Excuse me, Mr. Bowen. Kelly, do we have can we put up a slide or something? Do we have a diagram so that we can follow the presentation when he's talking about circulation and? Do you have a pointer up there, by the way?
No, I don't. There would have to be a sidewalk improvement just along this portion of LaPointe Street right here because of the offset intersection. And at that point to the west, it would not be necessary or desirable, in, according to what the comments were made at the Planning Commission and in the neighborhood. And to implement that, I would suggest a change to condition number 79 of the staff report, pages 15, and number 94 on page 16, which implies that full sidewalk improvements would be made along LaPointe Street. We would agree to the downslope drivings on Crown Terrace to the park area. Requires that we file an open space agreement to retain that 25-foot setback in perpetual open space, and requires us to file a trail easement through that area to assist with the implementation of the Rio Grande's Park and Rec trail system. So your comment, Mr. Dickens, relative to ownership and our access to that park, we would have to, by virtue of that condition, record such an access easement, trail easement. We've agreed to eliminate the gate between the residential and commercial. This was a significant comment of that made at the Planning Commission meeting. We've eliminated the driveway between the barn and mod house. As you may all recall, in pre-application, none of the council, and in fact those comments made at the Planning Commission prior to, no one was interested in seeing that driveway being improved. We would instead place a sidewalk and pedestrian pathway through there leading from the sidewalk into the residential feature of the project. We also agreed to return this project back to the Planning Commission and the ARC. I don't find a condition. I would suggest that a condition be added, most likely condition 15 on page 7. Would enable that to occur. We provided a guardrail example. This would also be reviewed by the Planning Commission and the ARC. I provided an example of a storm drain filter. This would be reviewed by your condition number 14 on page 12 for verification by Public Works. I had prepared a model. Now, I might point out that the colors and landscaping, the topography, except for that section that I didn't have existing topo on the east side of Crown Terrace, represents to scale the project that's being proposed before you this evening. The creek cleanup and restoration comments made at Planning Commission, those are managed through the mitigation monitoring program as specified in the EIR. Likewise, the flood ordinance compliance, that would relate back to condition number 106 of page 16. We agreed to modify streetlights. This may require a change to your condition 72 that specifies only that streetlights be installed per the downtown historic district. That was page 14. Virtually every item that the Planning Commission brought up following resolution to deny and their comment being that we would approve this project if the following were done, at that meeting, I agreed to these and have since provided them in plan form and in written form and to staff and to the council for consideration this evening, with the exception of one item, which was the loss of one residential unit. This is a mixed-use downtown urban core site. Density is calculated at 15 units per acre. It's not a suburban residential site, and it's been project accessible. That's 46% of the site. We exceed all standards in the development code, no exceptions. I really fail to see a need or a positive benefit of the loss of any downtown urban core housing, even one unit. That would be our sentiments on the loss of a housing unit. If you'd like, I could give you a design tour. You may have already have had that through the pre-app and review of plan. At your pleasure, I would be more than happy to describe the features of the units. Staff did mention briefly the character, the 12,000-foot commercial building at the front portion of the property has been designed in accordance with your comments and others to mirror the types of construction of the Loomis barn, board and batten, metal roof, etc. The buildings themselves, the residential units, are of a bungalow style. We felt this was a very comfortable relationship interface with the neighboring single-family residential area. Given the fact, though, that this is a different designation, expectations of more urban density. We have provided, I believe, nearly everything that could possibly be provided. We've compromised and we've made concessions. I certainly hope that this is a project, and I believe it is a project, that the council can support. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
So I had one quick question. And it's probably in here somewhere and I missed it, but the issue with the reduction of one unit, what was the Planning Commission's rationale for wanting to do that or recommending that?
I'm not sure. I think it was one unit in A or B, according to my notes. Now, I know the minutes don't reflect that. They said only in building type A. To loosen the site up, to allow for a moving van to stop and offload, I believe was some of their thinking about that. The staff can probably elaborate on if they have a more expansive version of the minutes in front of them, but that was my understanding. It was hitting on subjects such as that.
Mayor Pro Tem just answered my question. And it's on page 2 of the staff report. Item 9, the project should be reduced by one unit in Plan B to improve on-site loading and parking. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Questions for the applicant?
I had one, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead.
Were speed humps ever studied as far as for La Pointe or for Crown Terrace as far as calming? Because one of the things that I noticed that kept coming up with discussions from the neighbors was the fact that it's a cut-through route right now from 227, and I was wondering if that was ever looked at as a means to possibly reduce that?
I defer that to Dan Dawson, our traffic engineer, whether traffic comes
in the property. Open space agreement means that it's that you're saying that that's accessible then to the public?
No, I'm saying that the trail easement shall also be recorded within the creek setback area. As to the open space agreement and recordation of that, it's our intention and the applicant's intention that this area, the open space area required by ordinance that's been provided on plan, is an amenity for the homeowners so that they can enjoy that special section. Now, there would be a trail easement through there. I don't believe there's an enforceable way to keep someone on that trail if they're a member of the public just passing through. I believe the city has standards relative to what other types of improvements would be allowed within that 20-foot easement. I believe they're only passive ones. If this were to become a public park, or if it were a full public access, then there would certainly be issues of maintenance and liability. As most projects that are multiple family projects that you, I'm sure, are all familiar with, amenity areas for the homeowners are intended to be amenity areas for the homeowners. If council felt that this would be an opportunity to offer to dedicate for parkland, then that's something that I'd have to have the either Richard or Jim or Dwayne respond to if that would be the desire of council.
And I understand where you're coming from. My concern is that there's no provisions that I can see that would prevent public access. So what we're doing is we're developing what I would call an attractive nuisance. You're going to have public come to this area because it's now access. It's now been improved access to the creek, and yet we have a split rail between access and homes in someone's backyard, and there's going to be, I think, conflict issues that aren't being addressed today, which are, in my opinion, just glaring at me. So I guess that's kind of my concern.
What would you suggest as far as restricting public access, signage or locked gate system or something else?
My comment would be that right now there's nothing here that would show me that there's any resolution as to the potential conflict. It's not my job to design it. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Just two questions. One on the driveway access off of Crown Terrace. What's the width of the proposed access, the new one that you're putting in? Do you know the width of that?
The width of the street width?
No, of the actual access to the project. I'm asking in comparison to the current one.
To the different unit driveways, Jim? I'm not sure I understand.
You did a commercial project, I'll say off of Branch. Maybe I'm mixing up the roads. Hold on one second.
I think he means Crown Hill.
I'm sorry, yes. Oh. I do mean Crown Hill, yes.
Oh, 24 feet.
So it's 20. The entrance into the commercial spot is 24 feet, and the current one is, I'm going to say 12 or 15.
I don't know. I'd have to look back on the as-built grading plan. 24 feet is the standard. To 35 feet, which is probably right. It does satisfy the way the city defines measurement of height, high, low, center point, and we can go three stories, no greater than 36 feet.
All right, thank you. Those are my two questions.
Okay.
I guess I have a question for staff on the issue that Councilmember Dickens brought up about the public interface where we have potential trail access adjacent to backyards. Does the development code or the any standard that we offered to the applicant dictate the manner in which we put in fencing or the any form of a restraint? I mean, do we stipulate that it has to be a split rail fence in that particular area, or are there other?
No, it does not stipulate exactly what the fencing is to be. In any kind of the creek 25-foot creek setback area, we just don't want to have any paved areas, essentially. It doesn't matter what kind of fence goes in, but we just don't want it to be paved. And if the council is uncomfortable with the trail easement, this is a mitigation measure, but you are allowed to modify the mitigation measures. If you wanted to eliminate that, I think the reason why they put that in there, the consultants, was that people are going to go down there anyway, and they want to really direct people where to go so they don't trample on all the riparian vegetation down there. So,
Mayor, may I add a comment? Dwayne DeBlau just mentioned now a good example of this, and probably a more intensive use would be the Bob Jones bike trail from
I was just going to mention that.
And they have residential development abutting that. It doesn't seem to be a problem, and their fencing isn't other than just a minor incidental fencing no fencing at all.
Well, there I would have to disagree because I'm very familiar with that area, and there is there's a very restrictive steel grate fence, wrought iron fence along those properties.
To the Sycamore Springs size, though, it's just vegetation, not to the northerly properties.
No, where I'm talking about is where the trail meanders through to the driveway by the golf course. That's the only area where I'm familiar with, and that's a private development, given it's a private development. But still, the whole notion is to allow access to the creek in some way, shape, or form. But the other side, where residences abut the trail, that fencing is very restrictive. You can't get over it.
That's right. Between San Luis Bay and Ontario Road is where I was thinking.
Oh, okay. Vegetation and those types of things. My concern would be that what happens down the road if there are conflicts and the residents that move into this area that buy these units then come back to the city and then want to do some kind of additional screening that's a little more restrictive, is that then going to be considered development?
We've only dealt with what is allowed within the 25-foot setback in a couple of instances. I know that we are with Chappelle, Rob. We're allowing a trail to go in behind there with no fencing, and that's a DG trail that we're looking at. So it's we're adding some kind of material, but it's DG, so it allows penetration of water. The idea is that you can't put your play structure. You can't put anything that's permanent. Back there, like a storage shed or anything like that. Fencing, I think, is debatable. Really, it depends upon the situation and how necessary it is to have some kind of obstruction for people, to tell them where they can and cannot go.
These units will be for sale, is that correct?
Yes.
The property lines of these folks then will go into the 25-foot setback.
No, they would not.
I believe the tentative map would clarify, but that's considered common area? The Homeowners Association common area
would be responsible for that
in that particular configuration. So whether it's a private lot extending to the boundary, it is an easement for creek maintenance, and it is also common area for the Homeowners Association. Do you have the tentative map available?
Well, I guess I'm looking at the site plans that have been presented to us, and I'm showing a line that looks like to me that's depicting the 25-foot setback. Now, maybe I'm interpreting this incorrectly. But if I look at the site plan, the conceptual landscape plan that was provided for us, we have a center line, it looks like, which is the top of the creek bank, and then we have a line that coincides with that that actually is right up to the proposed housing units. And the split rail fence, which I'm assuming would be part of that person's property, is now considered private property, which if I lived there, I'd be putting a lot of play equipment and maybe a storage unit and so forth in that particular area.
I think you brought up previously that the vesting tentative map has not been fully reflective of the revised site plan that was submitted between the Planning Commission and the City Council. The lot configuration that is depicted on the vesting tentative map extends to the property boundary and then indicates the public drainage easement, closed split rail fence, and trail location. Relates to the top of Creek Bank. All of that's within the 25-foot, the trail area is within the 25-foot of top of bank. And basically the private use areas are adjacent to the residents, which are removed to a greater degree.
Yeah, I had a couple questions. So, Rob, what you're telling me is that the site plan that we received on June 9th is not the updated plan. The one I have before us. Okay.
All of the engineering details have not necessarily been revised to consistently reflect the revised site plan.
So if we're looking at the same plan, which is the concept landscape plan, is not the 25-foot setback in the backyards of these proposed homes?
The 25-foot setback extends to the approximate location of the nearest residences, and the trail is well within the 25 feet, closer to the top of Creek Bank. Typically, a public trail would not necessarily be at the outer edge of the creek setback.
Correct. Thank you. My other question that I wanted to ask earlier, which I forgot to, when this was a pre-application that came before us, there was talk about easement relinquishment along LaPointe Street. Where are we at with any city relinquishment of any easements along LaPointe in the back of this project?
My recollection of the council direction was that the southern 10 feet of the 70-foot LaPointe right-of-way could be considered surplus to any conventional street section. There is no proposal to improve a bridge connecting further west of LaPointe than the driveway access into the project. So the 10-foot is shown as a potential street vacation on the south side of the street, retaining a 60-foot right-of-way, and the street improvements would be within the 60-foot right-of-way. Curb gutter, sidewalk, and street pavement would be within the 30-foot portion of the street from centerline south.
Okay. So none of the improvements that are...
Okay, now I'm a little bit confused. I have to ask a quick question once again, direct for clarification purposes. the 25-foot setback from the creek, does that encroach on any property line of adjacent lots?
The vesting tentative map showed residential lots, and I believe it was 1 through 4, extending from the residential buildings to the property line, and there were easements depicted across those lots for private open space, creek maintenance, and a creek trail. But the lot ownership that the Homeowners Association would be responsible for maintaining would be a portions of lots 1, 2, 3, and 4, as I understand the comparison with the subdivision map.
Okay. Okay.
Do you have this available on an overhead? The vesting tentative map, is that available on an overhead? Because it actually shows some property lines on it. So.
Right.
Do you have that on an overhead?
No, but I could put it on the...
Yeah, it does appear that they're different.
Yeah, I'm going to open up one and put it on the projector.
This is the one we're looking at.
We're going to project the vesting tentative map.
I mean the individual lots.
Right here.
They're going to grant an easement.
That's the underlying.
If you can increase it to the upper left corner there, I think that would actually help things, because that's actually where I think there's potentially a conflict. The upper left. Keep going.
This is lot 1, lot 2, lot 3, lot 4.
Yeah, I
creek bank is in this vicinity. And there is a depiction on the landscape plan at least of 25 foot, which is a private open space easement, a creek. Easement
and the trail
within that is not defined. Okay. Excuse me, Mayor. Maybe I can help you out a little bit here. The lots extend all the way to the west. Within that, there is a 25-foot from top of bank creek setback.
It does. Thank you. Any other questions of the applicant or the staff report? Okay, seeing none, then we will open the public hearing portion of this item. Once again, we would ask that members of the public, if you do have a presentation, please limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as a whole. And with that, anyone who would like to address this item, please come forward. Please state your name and address for the record.
Mayor, council members, my name is Earl Balgerman, and I live at 505 LaPointe Street. And that's the property directly across northeast from the property under question here. And my property is probably about 100 feet or less. Five of my neighbors are 50 feet or less from the property. I had a sort of what I call a summary of what went on during January, February, March, and April planning missions. But I think I'd like to make a couple comments first. And that is that I understand the applicant's disappointment in the opposition to his project, which comes from the neighbors. Now, during those meetings, we heard them refer to This was all discussed, if a certain subject came up. This was all discussed during the preliminary meetings. Well, as you were told tonight, and as I was told for the first time, a number of organizations during preliminary meetings approved this project. But the neighborhood was not included. I heard about this project along with my neighbors within, I guess, 200 feet on January 8th. And on January 8th, it informed me that there was a project being considered on that property on January 18th. That's 10 days. But during those 10 days, I and my neighbors were pretty busy trying to find out all we could about this project. Now, I might suggest that on a project like this, in whatever area, pick out a few of the neighbors so that the neighborhood is represented. Now, maybe there are many objections to that, but that certainly would have helped here. I don't know if you run into this a lot during applications for this kind of development, but if you do, then the solution is to get the neighborhood involved early, not 10 days before the first planning commission. Now, it's my understanding or my impression during these four planning commission meetings that the two main items that came up were safety on Crown Terrace and also on La Pointe due to the increased traffic of these 24 residences. That was one item. The other item which was of concern a number of times was the density. Now, the two are tied together. There's actually 8 drive-in points on Crown Terrace, 8 drive-in points and back-out points to the project. 5 are to garages, 4 to the residential garages. The other one is a garage elevator type. Paint those 4 units, upper units. You don't need those 7 drive-ins and back-outs from Crown Terrace. That reduces the density down to 20 residences on, as I calculated, 1.1 acres. It's 220 feet east and west on La Pointe, 220 feet on Crown Terrace. Okay, now, that gives you a density, if you're using 24 residences, of near 24 per acre. It's actually 1.11 acre. Okay, if you look at the surrounding residences and compare those, this is really high. Our area, which is encompassed by by La Pointe and May Street, the next one to the north, and then Crown Terrace to the west, and I believe it's McKinley to the east. That area is 900 feet long and 260 feet wide. That equates to 5.5 acres. And there's 35 homes in there. And that's only about 6.5 residents per acre compared to the 23 and something per acre of this project. If you go up to those apartments on the east side of Crown Terrace, there's 9 units, and you have there 2/3 of an acre. So there's 9 residences are on 2/3 of an acre there, which gives you about 14 residences per acre, still considerably lower than the density of this project. Now, another thing that they brought up, which they were pretty concerned about, was the ramp sloping down or up. And, of course, they wanted to slope down, and the applicant has satisfied that requirement. The only thing is, when you go to the north end of that Crown Terrace, there's about only 6 feet difference between the current level of the property and the level of Crown Terrace.
Excuse me, Mr. If you could wrap up your comments, we'd appreciate it. You're at 5 minutes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. But you're talking about a lot of opposition to this. So I guess in conclusion, I'd like to remind you to take into consideration the street of the people who either are pro or con to this project. I think that's important. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward? And once again, I would ask that you be mindful of the three-minute rule.
Hi, I'm James Norby. I live at 419 LaPointe. I just bought it. It's coming up almost a year now. I didn't realize when I bought it what was I was into. The realtor told me they were thinking about putting in a permanent farmer's market. I fell for it, but whatever. Anyways, these guys have bought the property. It's basically about money. That's what it is. They want to put as many units on that property as they possibly can to make money. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way our country works, I guess. But I happen to live right on the dead end, right? And it's been a dead end apparently ever since you took Branch Street. Think about that. Seven. Just to get to here. From there. And what you can, I walked here in, 2 minutes. It would, you know, having everybody go out on LaPointe is insane. And, you know, on the dead end part by where I live. I mean, I don't want the traffic, but if it made sense, I could probably live with it. But every person that buys a place in that place is going to get stuck trying to get onto Branch Street, and the only other way out is to go out LaPointe, La Crown Terrace, and you have to make a couple of turns to get out of their condos first, and then by the time you get down to, you know, Crown Hill, there's going to be 30 cars waiting to get on Branch Street, even without the school open. Nobody's talking about this. The thing that I understand is the guy that owns the property next door won't let him have an easement, just absolutely refuses. That's what the story somebody told me. I don't know if it's true. But if that's the case, then they're just going to have to come up with more money and get an easement, because that's where everybody that lives there has to go anyways. They got to go to the freeway. Hardly anybody's going to go the back way. You know, I mean, the traffic on my street is nothing. Nobody goes that way. Everybody's going this way, right? Or to Lopez. So that's my point. Somebody ought to talk about where these people can come out, because this is going to be a long-term problem. As soon as you put in a driveway there, you know, if you don't give access to people, that's it. That's my comment. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm Carol Fulmer of 437 LaPointe, and my house is the 100-year-old house on the northwest corner of LaPointe and Crown Terrace, and I'm anticipating, as I look at this model, that I'm going to have a little strip of sidewalk that's going to have to take out the landscape and focus the lights. The city told me I could plant that years ago when I bought the house 20 years ago, because the lights shine into the house. And this is a personal thing, and I will address the other, but I'd like you to consider for this project a crosswalk, rather where the sidewalks on Crown Terrace and LaPointe already intersect, and have it just cross and cross the new island that you're considering, and not have to build a sidewalk and demolish that landscape. Be that as it may, I am quite concerned during the course of this discussion that we still have a kind of a schizophrenic idea, and I heard Mayor Ferrara even mention this, that we haven't really addressed the growth of this area. And I hear Mr. Bowd talking about the urban core, and this is all logical and legal for the urban core, and yet we still tout ourselves as the gateway to Lopez Lake Recreation Area and the farming communities and Save the Green. And so I think when we're talking here about introducing the first three, so I'm concerned, again, there were lots of tests done apparently on traffic, but people who live there know, for instance, that those driveways that Mr. Balgeman mentioned are just an accident waiting to happen. So those are my comments. Again, I'd like to re-echo Mr. Norby. I think this developer needs to find a way to put the traffic onto the commercial streets and not back into the neighborhood. And in spite of what he may think, I think most of the neighbors do expect a development there and are hoping that that this developer does it with some class so he can be proud of his contribution to this town and not take his money and run off somewhere else. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Bill McCann. I live at 575 Crown Hill. I want to start by stating that I feel the Creekside Center should eventually be approved in some form. If done properly, it will be a fine addition to our city. Having said that, I have some concerns. My main concerns are mostly with the traffic on East Branch Street and the corners of Crown Hill and Crown Terrace. I believe that a complete evaluation of this property, the Hayes property, and the Scolari property should be done to determine how best to handle all of the traffic within the boundaries of East Branch Street, Crown Terrace, LaPointe, and Mason Streets. It's a big block. This is especially important considering that the Scolari property is one of the sites being considered for the new post office. We will eventually have some large development in that big open area. We have been burned in the past by traffic studies that turned out to be wrong. The intersection to Trader Joe's on Rancho Parkway is the latest nightmare. To say that this project will not impact the level of service at the Crown Hill East Branch Street intersection is just wishful thinking. I will admit that the traffic is much worse during the Paulding Middle School peak traffic time, but there are many other times when traffic is backed up at this intersection. And I do have a few pictures that I would like to at least put one of them up here for you to see. That picture was taken about 7:45 on a weekday. So, in fairness, this is one of our peak times. But I was standing back almost to JJ's Market when I took this picture in my telephoto lens. It takes the traffic from the residential or whatever in this development. It goes up LaPointe Street to Crown Terrace, across to Crown Hill, and down to the same corner again. It really doesn't accomplish much. It maybe gives the fire department another entrance to it in case of an emergency. Other than that, it doesn't help. I have some pictures, and I'll hand them out, and you can keep them. I'll try to keep this short. My wife and I have lived on Crown Hill for the past 25 years, and we drive this intersection daily. We are as familiar with this area as anybody in the city. We do not believe that even with the proposed driveway relocation and a left turn lane added, that it will be adequate to service this development. The entrance on LaPointe Street will only serve to channel traffic to southbound Crown Terrace and back down Crown Hill to the same corner. This will only result in an escalation of traffic to a very dangerous blind intersection at Crown Hill and Crown Terrace. That's another thing that's never been mentioned. You come along Crown Terrace to Crown Hill, and you got a big stone wall at that little house that's on that corner. You have no line of sight relief there at all. When approaching Crown Hill on Crown Terrace, a motorist cannot see up the hill to his left until he is partway into the intersection. Anyone coming down Crown Hill has problems stopping or avoiding this motorist because of the steepness of the hill. I believe it is imperative that a reciprocal access agreement be obtained with the adjacent property to the west of this development. Even with that agreement, we will still have a less than perfect situation. Without it, impossible. Without this agreement, I suggest that you reduce the size of this project or phase it until such time another remedy is available. If you decide to reduce the size of this project, I suggest that you start by eliminating the upper units of the residential units on Crown Terrace. That would eliminate all of the problems associated with the driveways on Crown Terrace. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, Mayor and Councilman. My name is Ann Balgeman. I live at 505 LaPointe. I know you would like me to say something new tonight because many of the other people have already addressed this. But what I want to address is the letter that I wrote to the Planning Commission and that was forwarded to you this last couple weeks, which had 37 signatures of my neighbors opposing not this project, but the scope of the project, what it's going to do with the traffic and the safety situation, particularly the blind corner at Crown Terrace and LaPointe in the narrow streets with the many driveways. I know you received many other letters this week from my neighbors, and there are also other neighbors that could not be here this evening that share the very same view.
Point. Kelly, could you put up that other picture that shows the island that's going to be built along Crown Terrace?
Yeah.
Because that directly impacts a couple things I wanted to say. I'm not going to echo what everybody said. There's been some eloquent speakers who have made, I feel, some excellent points that convey how many of us feel. I live right on the corner where that island is going in. I have been told that it probably won't be landscaped, that it'll be concrete. I'm very concerned about the looks of Crown Terrace when this project is built and things like the island are built. We're talking about the uglification of LaPointe Street,
Barbara,
and Crown Terrace.
Excuse me, we have a pointer here if you'd like to use it.
I'm shaking so much.
Oh, that's okay. We all shake when we use it.
I don't know how it works. Easy. I'm talking about this island, which is going to extend pretty far down Crown Terrace, at least the way it's drawn here. My property is just to the right on the corner. Okay. So I am concerned about that island, what it's going to look like. Additionally, I'm really unhappy about all those trees along Crown Terrace. I look at this banner where we're Tree City USA, and we've got an accommodation for it. These trees are 20 years old. I realize the developer is showing some trees along Crown Terrace. I can't believe they're going to be anywhere near the height that any of these are. I beg you not to let all of those be destroyed. And my other concern is the lighting that has been proposed, and I realize that the developer has made some modifications, but what was contained previously that went to the Planning Commission were streetlights along Crown Terrace and the dead end of LaPointe Street that are like the streetlights on Commercial Branch Street. Those are residential streets. They are not commercial streets. And the light pollution for the condos up behind me on Crown Terrace and all of the neighbors surrounding the project are really unacceptable. So thank you for hearing me.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
And Kelly, could you please put up the one that shows just the overview of the project, the whole, the one that's kind of like this. Hi, my name is Kamea Rod. I reside at 534 Allen Street in the village of Arroyo Grande, and I own the business in question at 415 East Branch, Chameleon Fabrics, Furniture, and Gifts. And we are successfully now the tenant in that building. I would first like to rebut a couple of the items that Mr. Baud presented this evening and also clarify for the council, because I believe, the way I understand it, there are some misunderstandings. First of all, Mr. Baud said, we redesigned this project. When I look at this beautiful model here and I look at the original plans that I saw back on January 12th, I do not see that any of the project was redesigned. He may label it as redesigned, but it is kept labeling it as a grain warehouse. It was a working mill for approximately 20 years, a rye and barley mill, not just a grain warehouse. And she wanted us to emphasize that when we put up our little historical data about the barn. Also, Mr. Baud said to you this evening that virtually, and I quote, virtually every item the Planning Commission requested, they have done, with the exception of the loss of one unit issue, which you gentlemen raised to them and asked some questions. From my notes from that evening of the Planning Commission, I come up with several other items that have either been ignored, overlooked, or intentionally overlooked. One of them is about Nancy Parker. Planning Commissioner Nancy Parker mentioned the use of a certain percentage of stucco on the three-story commercial structure, and she wanted that mitigated. I don't know if that's in staff report, because we were just informed that this was going to be on the agenda just a week ago, and so we have not been able to look and see if that item was truly removed and how that was addressed, because stucco does not comply with the historic guidelines as a building material in the village or in the historic area. Another item was Nancy Parker again specifically requested that some type of creekside access be made in the project, and it's difficult for me to see, but this is tied in with the loss of the one residential unit. So how do you work this? Press them. Okay. Oh, well, I can't even see that map. Let's see. Where's? Oh, voila. Okay. Here's the barn right here. Here's the entrance. Here's the commercial structure. Nancy Parker, I believe, mentioned, kind of in response to what I had mentioned about the historic Loomis house being here, the little Hildy house being back. Mr. DeBlau's plans show for removal of a portion of the little Hildy cottage. I can't believe I'm shaking so much, which exists there. There's about a 10-foot bump out that this development would remove if it's approved as planned. Also existing right now today between the house and this first unit, and where you see the existing Milt Hayes warehouses or shacks, there is a beautiful little garden that is original to the Loomis house. We uncovered in the debris an original Arroyo Grande stone wall with an original archway dating back to the Loomis family, with a cute little pond that, if this one unit over here by the creek was eliminated, we would be able to provide creekside access, walk across the existing driveway and circulation path for 99 years, this open driveway, and I invite all of you council members to come out and walk it, because it's right there right now. We would be able to just cross that, walk through the little archway, walk through the cute garden, access the soon-to-be little studio or that's part of the Hildy house, walk through the gardens, and then what Mr. Baud also proposed was how they provided for this access between the barn and the Loomis house right there, that this will be a pedestrian walkway. And that's really not part of their property. It's the Browns who provided that access, and they want to see it created, whatever will benefit the development of the properties, doesn't make it a Craftsman. Clare Story windows didn't exist. The three little roof lines here on the top, it needs to be very strongly a Western storefront, something compatible with the barn. The board and batten is great. The colors comply, the number of parking spaces comply, but the styling does not. And now to get down to money. I am a designer. I'm in the design business. I am a 55-year-old woman. I represent a baby boomer woman shopper. I hope that you gentlemen realize how important I am as a target market in the entire United States. There's more of me, women shoppers, than any other body in the entire United States. And we go to places that are cute, charming, and character-ridden. We don't go to shopping malls all the time. We look for those unique shopping experiences. That is why people come to the Village. Let us not forget that when we're talking about the styling of this three-story commercial building, it impacts all businesses in the Village. And if you don't believe so, just take a look at the town center at the entrance to our Village that hides the church, is made out of stucco, has modern awnings, and has number of vacancies. We just now, after a year and a half, have gotten another vacancy filled with a new bridal store. It is important to all business owners for thriving businesses, which bring you the sales tax dollars that the community needs. We need to be thinking about what is cute, charming, and character-ridden. And this has got to be a part of this plan. We need to demand the details. Coco Chanel, the designer, said design is in the details. Please demand these details. Please do not let this project go forth with the styling that it is. The other residents have addressed all of the parking issues and et cetera. And I had one other thing to mention. Oh, property rights activists. Once again, I've been contacted by several property rights advocates. It is an important part of the community, but this development is one of two, and I believe another speaker mentioned we have the Scolari property to develop, we have this property, and that's about it for the Village. So if we blow it here, we've already missed out on the town center at the entrance. If we blow it here, that's it. We might as well just pack up the Village Historical Society and just move on. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street, in the Village. I believe that this project has gone through architectural review, and in that case would have been reviewed by people who are familiar with the cityscape. I believe the project is outside the strictest area of architecture that would include the Village core specifically and is in Village mixed-use area as far as zoning goes. If the city truly intends to provide workforce-type housing, affordable-type housing, projects like this that are at the core of the city are the place where they should be provided, where you have housed that we should follow the guidelines set down by our committees, architectural review committees. There will be an architectural historic society. Maybe this could go past them as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Jacqueline Pontarelli. I reside at 508 LaPointe Street. Honorable Mayor and Council Members. Most everyone has very judiciously and well studied and brought out the concerns of both LaPointe Committee, and there's some things I just wanted to add myself because that makes my short list, so that'll make us all happy, or my list short. I think we're at a unique time, and so as, again, mentioning getting ahead of ourselves traffic-wise, something I pondered and would like all of you to, so that we both as citizens and merchants and those living here and visitors can truly benefit from what progress can be gained from this development. We are right at the end and then the junction between going further south for the new wine country. We are the new Napa Valley. And I think it's critical to remember that as people go through Paso Robles, come down through San Luis Obispo, end up through here for the through the two basic arteries, that we have businesses that both attract them, have parking and worked out the travel, because I know there are many such little small towns like this where people turn around, go back, spend their money in the other tourist venues. So I'd like to see some of those be like Lund's, where you can get some unique items and you can also stop and we can make some arrangements with some of the wineries that would like another off-site, very brief tasting area. So that's just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, honorable members of the council. My name is Howard Mankins. I live at 200 Hillcrest Drive, Rio Grande, and I have several businesses in the village for Rio Grande. I have lived here all my life. It's my town. It's everybody's town all of a sudden. And I've watched the changes come about. And I've watched council sit and ponder, protest, and for and against. And I think that there's more than just being for and against a project. It's what's good for the town that counts. And I think that you gave a good example of the need for water. And unfortunately, a former council did not see the need to get state waters. It went by our doorstep, and we now have this problem. And you're having to deal with it. The same goes for sales tax. The city has a certain amount of property in the core, particularly the village, which has been advertised and is very prominent up and down the coast, and it will become more so. I think it's necessary for the council to consider a project that brings in sales tax, offers some housing that can be lived in by those who work there, hopefully, and keep in mind that projects cannot, so council has a very determined and hard project here, or a hard decision to make on this project. Business in the village, I belong to the Business Village Improvement Association, and they supported this project, that it would be a good thing for the village. More business brings more sales tax. I believe that 12,000 square feet in retail is a big come down from 31,000 feet, and it would be a fair compromise. So I support the project. I hope the council doesn't keep batting it back and forth. There's just so much, having done a little project by moving that business out to what I consider an improved location and bringing more sales tax to the city. I don't believe that you can continue to increase the cost by demands of improvements to the project, and sending it back and forth makes it almost imperative for a person to charge unreasonable rents, and the income is not there. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Steve, it's a little bit late in the game. I wonder if I could impose on you as the next speakers. You can come on up. I was wondering if I could impose on you. Is there a way that, Rob, perhaps you can assist? Can we get that small press table positioned over here? Mr. DeBlau spent a lot of money, I'm sure, building that three-dimensional model. I'd like to get it over here where we could see it. Thanks. That's easier on the back.
Oops.
Yeah, if you could orient it towards Branch Street.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Good evening, Mayor Farrar and council members. My name is Greg Moore. I reside at 529 Corbett Canyon. I am a business owner here in the village. I also am a member of the Village Improvement Association, and I am here in support of this project. And I want to point out that this is compatible with the area in the village plan. It is a nice addition to the village area. It does provide a live-work environment that we all desire down here in the village. And I certainly can appreciate people's comments regarding traffic, but no one has discussed the fact that what draws people to the village and living in this area is the fact that they can live here and possibly work here and also walk down to the village. And that's attractive, as some people had mentioned that they walked here this evening. So I think it's very attractive for people that are drawn to the village to have a development like this. And I think that it is, as I said, a compliment to the area, and it would be providing the continued viability for the village and the city as a whole. And I thank you and hope you support this project.
Traffic, if they don't have to, they'll go home, they'll stay home and come out of their houses when the traffic eases up. And I envision a lot of that type of personnel or people in this project. And so that's all I have to say. And I hope you like the project, and I hope it gets approved. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. Susan Flores, 529 East Branch. Mr. Mayor and City Council members. I've made kind of a couple of notes. I've attended actually all the meetings that have taken place in regards to this project and in regards to the other project by Mr. DeBlau and Associates, which is across from my home. What I have to say is basically I'm very happy to see the project that's across from my home. It's blending in very well. And I see the potential with this project also. I don't feel that Mr. DeBlau or the associates are here just to make money. He's a longtime resident of our town. I find that not to be a very decent comment. Our town center is another issue that was built a number of years ago. It followed the guidelines that we had set in place. We've improved those guidelines. I believe these guidelines are being followed with this project. I don't believe that nitpicking is the way that's going to resolve maybe seeing too much traffic. We need to maybe open up Crown Hill. We need to access some of our streets, not to close them off. We need to put more sidewalks in for the kids. That has nothing to do with this project. And I think we need to just address the things that actually pertain. There was a time when the shop owners lived up there on Branch Avenue. You can go back in the history of Arroyo Grande. And I think by having a close core of residential, we'll bring back a little more of that feature again. We all want to live here in the village. I'm blessed. I can walk to the stores. I love it. I can go to the restaurants. I can come here to City Council. My car's at home. You need to keep in mind, yes, we're trying to make it better for the people on La Pointe. They wanted that four-way stop sign. There's reasons how it gets done, and there's reasons not. It has to do with access. It has to do with the number of houses and all of that. That's all traffic stuff. That's all Caltrans stuff. They have followed the guidelines. They have followed people's requests inside, out, and backwards. Every time somebody says jump, they say how high. I think they're good people. I think they're really trying to make something very good for our town. And I really think everybody needs to have an open mind, get the things that need to be addressed done, but don't stop it. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Council, my name is John Kateras. I live at 203 East Branch Street. Most of you know me. I'm the owner of Branch Street Deli. I've lived here probably most of half my life. Problematic with the traffic, because as it is right now, you have traffic coming from the east side of the city, coming through the village. We're a big funnel right down here, and they're coming down the freeway. If we approved the 227 project years ago, I think it would have been a lot better. I approved this. I talked to Mr. DeBlau years ago when this project came up, and it wasn't just in January of this year. This project, I believe, has been in the forward plan for, 4 years. And I kind of agreed that I liked the original project that he had. Now he's decided to do this, and I think it's a great for the town because I think they're looking at more so more traffic. But I think these people who are going to move into those homes are not going to be driving. They're going to be walking to and from the stores and the restaurants and whatever. So I compliment him what he's done. I feel sorry for everybody else around the project, maybe because maybe they shouldn't get in their cars and drive down the street to the freeway. Maybe they should get on a bike or walk. Okay, so Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? If I could, I'm sorry. If I could have, if there's anyone who has not spoken, if we could get folks who have not spoken, and then we'll allow other folks to come up that have already been there.
Mr. Mayor, City Council, Mike McConville at 529 East Branch Street. I have a lot of empathy for the folks that live in the area here. Every morning I try to get to work in Grover Beach, and I have to back out into Branch Street out here and take my life and fenders at a risk. Anyway, what I see happening, and I've sat in most of the meetings and watched this project develop, or at least develop through the process, and I come away with a negative feeling from the council. And it seems to me that you're trying to look for a way to deny this project. And I know you're trying to, as a council, you're trying to make this project a better project, but it seems to me you're nitpicking it to pieces. And I'm really sorry to say that, because I really feel that you're great folks. You're doing a great job. But you, at some point in time, you've got to let the process work, and as far as I'm concerned. This is a good project. Everybody in their mind would redesign this. They really would. They would take the time probably to, and folks have taken the time to redesign this in their mind. It gets to a point to where the developer can only do so much. And then, in fact, it's amazing he's still here. I would have walked away a long time ago. I get this much negativity from city council and the neighborhood. The traffic problems, the school problem, as far as I'm concerned, I would like to charge the city council and challenge them to remedy the problem that we got. Not traffic, because the traffic is going to get worse no matter this project or anything else. You build another house behind us in the hills or anything else, and you got a funnel here that's going to have a problem. Also, I probably have the same problem that the folks have living there. But someday you're going to have to open La Pointe also. You're going to have a bridge across it. You've got to have that traffic flow. And I'm not a visionary or anything like that. I just see this needed. This project is becoming a fix-all project, so to speak. And I don't think it's right. I really don't. The other suggestion I have for the city council, and I'll try to be very brief here, is that everyone needs to know what you people want. A developer comes to the city, and I get the feeling from all these meetings that he really can't read you guys. I mean, the council, excuse me. They can't read you. I would suggest in the future, if you could ever get all of your ideas into a list, and publish the list as to even what kind of businesses you like to see in these type of projects. I'm assuming this project's going to go ahead at some point in time, some form. Let's start now telling the public, telling the developer what kind of business you want to see in there that's going to augment your city. Everybody should have the input on that, okay? Because what happens is if you let the public know ahead of time what goes into that, what you want to see in there, people are not going to be falsely applying for those leases and things like that. They're going to know ahead of time that this is what you want in those, that project. And it also tells the developer not to interview those type of businesses that are like AutoZone or something like that. I hate to say. Anyway, that's my feelings. I support the project. I think you should go ahead with it. And as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who has not spoken yet?
Michael Bondello, 207 McKinley. I've lived up there about 25 years. I've been sitting here watching, and I'm seeing a council that's very concerned with the details. You guys are doing a good job. That's my opinion. The other thing I'm seeing is you're trying to listen to what my neighbors are saying, concerning their concerns about safety and traffic, and that's not something that's frivolous either. So you guys are doing a good job here. You're listening to everybody, and I think they have perfectly good reasons for saying what they have. We've been having a developing traffic problem there for the last 25 years, and we come down to a funnel that's called Crown Hill, and that's where everything funnels into. This project is not going to create the problem. The problem's there. It will exacerbate the problem, and that's something that these guys are trying to head off, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. They're serving their neighborhood by doing that, and you're serving us by listening to all sides concerned. I think it's perfectly valid of these people to come forward and state safety issues and traffic issues as well and say that, you know, you aren't the ones that created the problem either, but it's a problem that does exist, and it's something that we really don't want to make worse. So I just want to come up here and give you my two bits worth that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who has not spoken yet? Okay. Your turn.
Again, Mr. Mayor.
Joe Bowd, I'd like to respond to some of the comments I heard this evening, and I'd also like to introduce Dan Dawson, who can very briefly describe the traffic studies that have been conducted and the level of service impacts and the real technical reasons why traffic may be perceived as difficult and awful at certain points of time, but in accordance and in compliance with the city's traffic ordinance, traffic study ordinances, the way this project does not create a problem other than what is already existing, which, according to the traffic analyses that have been conducted, the level of service is operating at level of service A in all the pertinent intersections. But I'll let Dan Dawson speak to that. I want to clear up one comment I heard. There is no elevator proposed in the parking garage at the commercial building. Access is provided to 12 spaces coming directly off of Crown Terrace at that level. Access is provided for under that level parking from the grade level. There is no interior elevator proposed to drop vehicles down to the lower floor. So just to get that straightened out. The streetlights, again, we offered to have an adjustment or relaxation of the city's street lighting in the residential portion of the project, and that's something that council would have to make that determination. The comments related to the unable to understand direction from the council and other bodies, that's the purpose of a pre-application meeting, and that's why we went through over a year of pre-application meetings with council, Planning Commission, ARC, community groups, and so forth. The project that's before you today was the product of those of that input. So I don't believe that it's quite fair to suggest that this has not been fully presented to those different groups and to the community. The comment related to redesign, the redesign reference that I made was from the original shopping center, 35,000 feet, into this mixed-use project of 24 units in and the 12,000-foot building. And likewise, the comment related to the access, use of stucco, and so forth. The Planning Commission adopted, as you know, it's in your package, a second motion. The first was for denial, but they would have approved it if the following were done. That's what I was referring to. I just want the record to make that clear. We have done all of those things in accordance with that second resolution adopted by the Planning Commission, with the exception of that question related to density that we discussed earlier. And with that, I'd again encourage
you. Section from the commercial section, that's two-way, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can go in and out at that point.
Yes. So the residents have the option of going out through the commercial parking area and or around through the point, yes.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We are going to close the public hearing portion of this item and bring this back for discussion and action. And let's start over at the other end with Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to thank all the residents also for everything that you've had to say tonight. And I must say I took a lot of notes. I'll start out by saying that I saw this project at the Prairie App when I was in the Planning Commission. And one of my concerns that I raised at the time, and I will add that I did like the project, but one of my concerns was the access through the west property. And Mr. Mankin is very correct when he talks about a lot of previous mistakes have been made in the city. But there was definitely a mistake made when the developer sold off the west property to not retain access through that property. And I think you're realizing it right now. So I'm going to go over a lot of the issues that I have, but ultimately I can't support the project until access is granted through the west property. I look at the traffic flow from this development, and I don't agree that traffic will go out La Pointe as much as everyone feels that it will. More likely, they'll want to come out and make a right-hand turn onto a branch. The problem is that it's going to be at an area where it's going to impact Crown Hill again. And so I think the reason people will go out through the back property will because they won't have an alternative. So I think it's imperative that we have that west access. I've got a lot of notes here, so I'm just going to kind of scan them real quick here. Let's see. One of the things, and I try not to redesign projects, as one of the council members say, but I also don't have a problem with putting a little insight in when I see something. And with discussion with the trees that are along Crown Terrace on the corner near La Pointe, if that one condo would have been turned to access La Pointe, actually, and possibly redesigned, it very possibly could save that grove of trees, plus also reduce the access points onto Crown Terrace by one, onto a street that is definitely very calm. So that might be something to look at. Looking at the model, I have a little bit of concern with the scale of the commercial building. The barn is not a small building. I think it's an appropriate building, but when you look at the commercial building, it's considerably bigger. The trees are doing a lot right now to try to soften that, but those trees are definitely at maturity, what we're seeing on the model, and the building's sticking up above them. So I definitely have some concern, and before I would probably approve that scale, I'd want to see story poles out there to truly see what that building was going to look like. Ultimately, I think most of the issues can probably be resolved here. I don't see a real stumbling point here. I could, if it wasn't for the west access, I might be able to even propose something.
Just one, in your analysis, and I'm sure I could go back, did you actually analyze where Crown Terrace comes into Branch? And was it also, did it also meet the A grade?
Crown Terrace and Branch.
Crown Hill into Branch.
Yes, we did.
And
we did detailed studies, counted cars, pedestrians, children walking to and from school, both in the AM peak hour between 7 and 9 to envelop the AM peak hour period as well as the afternoon peak hour period. There is a short period, as the gentleman said, where there's some congestion at the intersection. It lasts about 10 to 15 minutes prior to the start of the school day, which is about 10 minutes to 8. During that period, the project will generate about 30 peak hour trips to and from that driveway, mostly outbound from the residences. There will be some delays, although overall the intersection operates at level of service C, and that meets your city standards.
And that's because you're averaging it over the two-hour period.
No, it's the one peak, the peak hour period is identified within that two-hour period, okay. And then the average is over the one-hour period.
It's over the one-hour period. So it's terrible for 15 minutes and good for 45, and that's how you get all the way to A. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. That was actually my only question. I don't know if anybody else wants to ask a question while he's up.
Not at this time. Go ahead with your...
I guess I want to split this into two halves, and that's the residential and the commercial project. I can certainly realize that at first glance, when you're looking at 24 additional residential units, the impact to the residential community would it seems like it would be great. But I think that one of the things that I've learned in going over lots of traffic reports is that it isn't residential development that creates traffic. It's commercial development. In fact, in this particular one, I believe that the net AM peak hours, which is what I think we're focused on here, is from the entire residential component is 16 trips. So it's actually relatively small when you consider the actual totality of the traffic here. But I also think that if you take a step back and take a look at the total impact on the residential neighborhood that this has, is yes, there's some additional trips, but there's also some significant improvements to the residential nature here. I think specifically, and I did go up and walk this area, and I agree that people coming around that turn, I have a lot of trouble with the streets here, obviously, from La Pointe to Crown Terrace is a problem. I mean, just this evening, I almost got run over by a guy. He's actually going the other way. He was coming up Crown Terrace going on to La Pointe, but he almost ran me over as I went over here to check something out. The changes they're proposing here return Crown Terrace to a residential street because of the way they're going to square it off with La Pointe. So you can't come whipping around that turn. It's not a speedway anymore. The addition of the sidewalk on the west side here also improves the residential nature of this. And then finally, the driveways, while they would be relatively unsafe with the road in its current configuration, would even contribute more to the residential nature of Crown Terrace. So I actually think the net effect of this is an improvement to the Crown Terrace La Pointe section of this. You're going to pick up some trips, although I do think the majority of them will clearly go out the front of the property. Nobody would make the 7 right-hand turns if they didn't have to. They'll all go out the front of the property. Well, not all of them, but the majority of them certainly will, and absolutely will at peak time, given the choice. So I think that on the commercial side and combined with residential, I do think there's obviously a tremendous amount of traffic in this at this particular intersection. But again, we do set up this standard. There is one time in the day when this is particularly bad. But the overall effect at this intersection, according to our standard, is relatively good. If this was a B minus, you know, to a C or a C minus to a D or somewhere in there, yeah, I'd get the traffic engineer up here and as Ed'll confess, I'm certainly willing to debate, you know, how you distribute the traffic and how that might affect it. But I do think that the overall traffic effect, while it's certainly any additional trips are going to impact this section here, according to our standards, doesn't really justify us killing the project based exclusively on that. I do share some concerns with the scale of the building, but I'm going to leave that to architectural review. Frankly, architectural review isn't my strength. It does seem pretty tall to me. I always have trouble with this average grade rule, but I would leave that to architectural review. I know it's already gone there once, but it is set that would absolutely go back to architectural review, and we will have the opportunity to review that at least review the architecture of it at that point. I guess hearing the second entrance really is kind of the key here. I do think that when you have the addition of the second entrance, I guess what it is we really do need to improve as much as possible the traffic congestion here at Crown Hill and Branch, and that's what we're looking at. The second entrance probably tied in with this, I'm going to say, gives this project approaches to a neutral effect. Absolutely, at school time, it's not totally neutral, but overall, I think it would be a neutral effect as far as the congestion at Branch and Crown Hill goes. So, again, going forward, I'd certainly want to see the clarification on the creek setback that the map actually reflects, so that we don't end up, you know, building a house right on the edge of the creek setback and then having this public open space that they can't build into, and clarify how we're going to deal with that. And I do think going forward that I'll agree with Councilman Arnold here that somehow getting the second entrance here would greatly improve this and makes it worth waiting for. Other than that, I agree. I think that you've given us, particularly in the residential section, exactly what we're looking for in the village, which is, you know, when you take even a step farther back and look at housing in general, here we're providing 24 units, and I keep having to remind people that 8 of these are granny units. You know, it's really 16 three-bedroom homes as far as real square footage and those kinds of things go. And it's immediately adjacent. So if anything, the overall traffic impact in our community is decreased by this kind of a project. And this is exactly what we're looking for. Yes, there are some impacts in this immediate neighborhood, but I think that the overall effect on the residential neighborhood, at least Crown Terrace and LaPointe, is neutral. And really probably an improvement once all of those improvements are in place. So with those two additions to the project, I guess I'll call it, I could support the project basically as it's designed. Thank you.
Back when the pre-application came before us, and there's been a couple comments about this project being approved at that particular point. The projects are not approved at the pre-application point. The pre-application is merely an opportunity for us as individuals to review a conceptual plan and to provide input. And I like to go back to that because I'd like for the folks to know, in my opinion, my comments way back when, and I'm going to read this, it says that I inquired about where the focus should be for the Village Core. My question to staff was, you know, where is our vision? What should we be putting here? And I'm gonna get into that in just a second. But there was a pre-application or a concept plan that came before us that was primarily commercial with a little bit of residential. And I actually preferred that better. And I feel like that particular land use fits better with this particular site. I did not support this. Massive residential coming forth in its current configuration, and that was presented. And I can't speak for my colleagues, and I'm going to allude to that in just a second. But the pre-application is certainly our opportunity to give that input. I will also have to say that this is the first opportunity that this has come back to this body, and I take offense to the fact that we're nitpicky. That's not what we're here to do. My job is to look at the devil in the detail. And if I don't do that, I'm the one who approves this, or I do or don't, and I'm the one who gets caught at JJ's at the corner saying, why in the heck did you do that? I take a lot of pride in the fact that reviewing these and looking at the things that might come up in the future and the things that I've seen in my six-year tenure up here, when we look at our conditions of approval that are vague, those tend to come back and bite us. And I want to make sure we get those out and make it clear up front. Let me talk about this particular site because this is going to hopefully capsulize where I'm coming from. This particular site, I believe, needs to capitalize on the assets that are common to this parcel. In my opinion, we have three primary assets: creek access, creekside access, close proximity to the village, and the historic buildings and features that this site holds. And when I look at those three assets, that I think that anyone who is looking at developing this parcel, I want to say, how are those assets being brought forth? How are they best being designed in such a way that are going to really complement? And what I see here is I see a problem. And the problem, first of all, goes to the size and scale. To me, one of the prominent features of this particular site is the Loomis Barn. And what we're proposing is a three-story structure right next to it that dwarfs that particular asset. And I think that's a mistake. I think we need to look at size and scale and how it complements the assets that are there. Second of all, pedestrian orientation. If we're in close proximity to the village, how does this site, and the land use conflicts are going to be twofold. One are the conflicts between the commercial and residential, where the primary traffic is going to come through this parking lot. And it's a parking lot. It's not a street. And I think that's a problem. And I think that'll eventually come back to us, and the folks in the retail are going to say, we want to block this off. And I think it's poor planning, and I think we may as well deal with it now. The other conflict is going to be between the residential and open space. The open space is open space, and when we talk about open space, it's public open space. And there really isn't any in my opinion, any detail that's saying how is that going to happen. We have a park. We have, yes, a pathway. The pathway doesn't lead anywhere, which is not consistent with our general plan and our parks and rec element. But I think that we need to have some continuity there. But we have an open space that is basically within 10 feet of someone's house. And I think it's only a matter of time until those folks say, this is my property, which they have every right to do, and I want to put up a wall or a fence, and what is that going to look like? And so we need to deal with those land use conflicts now instead of later. This particular parcel historically has had no access to Crown Terrace. So historically, what we're doing is in the access to this property has been to Branch and Crown Hill. In my opinion, I'm not requiring the developer to solve all the problems, but if the developer wants to have access via the driveways to Crown Terrace, in my opinion, it needs to be improved to city standards. And city standards are a 30-foot-wide road, and we need to put in a road. It's not appropriate to have a 24-foot-wide road with driveway access for a couple reasons. We are in very close proximity to a school site. Kids not only walk, but they ride bikes. Where are the kids going to ride their bikes on that street without being hit by a car? I think that it's nearsighted to believe that a 25-foot road with that type of access is going to accommodate this facility. When we have development come forth, it's upon them to actually provide the adequate improvements that are going to enhance the community. And I think that, to me, is a major factor. That road needs to be widened. I'm not talking about sidewalks on the other side. I'm not asking them to do that. They are going to put the sidewalks, but the road needs to be widened. Right now, we have enough space for two cars to go by. That's it. I'm not in favor of relinquishment of any easements along La Pointe. This may not come across well to many of the neighbors in that area, but we do need to look at future road circulation, the possibility of a bridge across La Pointe. Needs to be looked at. And I know that's going to create controversy, but reality is that we need to look at better circulation, and that needs to be addressed. That I could say that tonight, and if everyone were in agreement, it would still be 10 to 20. That property owner has every right to put up a wall or fence or whatever, and this is my property, this is your property, we need to address that issue. So with that, I think that what I would suggest to the applicant is to look at the assets that this particular parcel provides for them, capitalize on those assets, mitigate as best to their ability within their powers the traffic circulation needs. And I would certainly, this project or this property will be developed. And I think that even the folks that came up and said, well, gosh, I like this, I think you'll like the enhanced project that comes forward because I'm being nitpicky. But I think you'll hopefully like that as well. And I think that what we really want to do is provide for an area that's going to really complement and attract people. And right now I see I don't get the feel that we have a nice cohesive project. I think that size and scale needs to be addressed, pedestrian orientation and the land use conflicts really need to be looked at a little more seriously. With those things, I think that we could certainly revisit this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've got a couple of quick questions for staff. I didn't notice how many trees are proposed to be removed with this project.
I would have to refer to the landscape plan and actually count them, but it's predominantly the trees along Crown Terrace. I think that there's a couple of pine trees within the project site. There's no significant trees, meaning oak trees that are being removed, or the magnolia tree.
Thank you. I've got a few comments to make on the project myself also. I have to agree with some of the things that Councilman Dickens just said. First, the devil's in the details. And when a project comes before us, that's what we're supposed to look at. We're supposed to look at the details. We're supposed to take all the different factors in consideration. We sit here and listen to what the public has to say. We listen to what the proponent of the project has to say, and then we try to match it up with what the general plan says and what's good for the city and good for our community. And that does mean looking at the details. So that's what we do. I've got some real concerns with the left turn pocket as it's proposed. If two or three cars were able to stack up on that pocket, I'm not sure how many people are going to sit back there when traffic is heavy at the minimal times of the day it is and wait in the left turn lane without trying to cross Branch. And I can see where we're going to be blocking Branch up at times. So I've got some concerns about that. I'm also, if I'm looking at the project model the way it looks right now, where the driveway is situated, puts it right at the point of confluence with Branch and Crown Hill. And I think that may have some problems, too. I think that one of the things that has to happen for this project, and I think the city should be somewhat flexible, too, to make certain that we have adequate lighting on the facility, adequate lighting on the site, and yet do not create light pollution for the existing residents in the neighborhood. One of the things we might want to look at is the one-year look-back that was proposed on an interior gate, if necessary, once we do finally approve a project. I think that most of the traffic is not going to try to exit to the rear onto La Pointe unless they're trying to exit out and get to 227 the back route. Those are the people that are going to go out La Pointe. Anyone else going out La Pointe is going to make a series of right-hand turns. They may do that if exiting the driveway at the front is so difficult that they can't. It just goes to underscore the fact that we do need that western exit, the western exit, access point there, too. Councilman Dickens makes some good, strong points about pedestrian orientation here and flow of pedestrians through the area. I've heard several members of this council tonight also mention that we really have to make some clarifications and certainties in terms of the open space and how it affects the properties that are there. I do want that cleared up before I'm going to approve this myself. In terms of the density, over the past couple of years, we've made a strong point up on this council of attempting to preserve agricultural properties in the city. To do that, we're going to have to grow in other places. We're going to have to go to higher densities in some locations. This property was rezoned and made to mixed use. And with mixed use, there are some bonuses that come forward, and there's some higher densities that are made available. I don't have a particular problem with the density on this project. There may be some issues with scale. Although that one building does seem to dwarf the barn at this point, that may not be a deal breaker for me, though. I think the key issues for me, though, are going to be circulation and traffic and the access to the creek and those issues. At this point, I cannot approve the project.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. Perhaps Kelly or Rob or both of you. For the benefit of the audience here, and if there's anyone still watching at home at this hour, there was a recommendation to perhaps phase the project and observe. Could you describe that for everyone?
There was initially staff recommendation phase the project to defer the 12,000 square foot commercial proposed building until the western access could be accomplished. The applicant has been in negotiations with the Western property owner to make the project not totally dependent upon cooperation, which hadn't been secured and still has not been secured. He commissioned a traffic study. There is a potential for access agreement, and it's more just a matter of how feasible is that. And I think the reason that the staff did not make a specific condition of approval recommendation to either the Planning Commission or to the council was a fear that if it is a requirement that the project could be held hostage by a property owner who I think receives mutual benefit. We are requiring this project to provide reciprocal access. We are trying to assist in the negotiation for that beneficial access to both properties, but there is no assurance at this stage that we could compel it. If you make it a requirement, the city could implement that through eminent domain if it becomes crucial and it cannot be accomplished through other means. The city would have to assist in the applicant's acquisition of that easement.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask the applicant a question, Richard or Duane or Mr. Bowd. Are those negotiations still moving, or how are they looking? Medium, Duane, thumbs down, thumbs up, somewhere in between?
We're under discussions about it right now. There's some concerns and some demands that are not sure, we're not sure can be taken care of yet, and we actually just need to discuss those further. But if, you know, we definitely can't be put in a position where somebody could just say, well, hey, I want $1 million for it. I mean, that would be a big disfavor to us if somehow we were told, you know, no project and then put somebody else in a position of just leveraging us. So that's where it's sensitive. You know, you could put us in a position where we're just at a huge disadvantage. So we're working on that, and I think maybe we could get back to you on that and see what we can come up with.
Okay, thanks. Steve, question for you. Is there a way we can assist in this negotiation? I know we've done similar things in the past. If we can bring folks out, if the applicant is even willing to maybe sit around a table and discuss this other access, we'll buy the coffee.
I actually believe our community development director is already has that underway, and I'm sure he's...
Yeah, but Rob doesn't buy coffee for anybody. So. Okay.
I think they've had at least a couple of meetings, and we'd be glad to continue to try to facilitate in any way that would be of assistance.
Okay. I want to make a couple of general comments, and, you know, he's hiding in the back row right now, but you see what you started with your comment. I guess I want to say, yeah, I'm a nitpicker and proud of it. You know, there was some discussion earlier about the other end of the village we review. And, you know, certainly we can't have a developer come in, wave a magic wand, and fix all of our existing problems. At the same time, we do have to be mindful of ensuring that the project that is presented is in and of itself the best it can be. And the three measurements for me have always been those key words within our development code and within our general plan, and that is size, scale, and intensity of use. Those three factors are even more critical when we talk about the village, particularly the village and the circulation problems that we have. On the issue of detail, and I want to make sure that I clarify my comments. Right now, I'm grateful that the Village Center is completely occupied. And I wish nothing but success to the people who are trying to make a go of their businesses in that Village Center. There was a lot of emotion centered around that particular project. I still encounter people wanting to know why we approved the architecture and the size, scale, and intensity of that project. And I have to tell them, not only was it not this council that determined that project, it wasn't any council. That project never came to the council. That project was approved through an interpretation of existing standards by the Planning Commission. That's how it happened. The city at the time was, distracted with a little thing called Five City Center in Walmart, and that sort of slid in under the radar screen. So that's the kind of the rest of the story. Had that project come to us, and you can talk to some of the planning commissioners who were seated at the time. One of them was our former city councilman, Sandy Lubin. If you talk to him now, he would say, I wish we would have had one of these before we approved that project. I wish we would have had a dimensional model so that we could make a better judgment call on things like architecture. They didn't. All they had was the printed word, which attempted to define our standards at the time. Getting back to this project, I guess in response to the degree of detail that we go into, we do that. And the reason why is because we don't want another situation that exists at the entry to our village to exist here. And that was some in substance, the original, the first in conversation that I had with Richard when we first walked the property. And one of the challenges was the fact that there was a lot of emotion when that Village Center started to take shape and people saw it for the first time. They saw the architecture. And the admonishments started coming fast and furious at that point. And the admonishments were, don't you dare, city of Arroyo Grande, let that happen on the other end of the village. We still hear that. We heard some of that tonight. I appreciate this dimensional model. The nature of my appreciation is something you may not like, but I've got to focus on that commercial building. If that's a replica of the roof line, I don't care for it. I think it needs to have the type of roof line that would be more consistent and blend in better with the barn and or some of the residences. Those I don't know what you call them. Their gables or whatever. Those are things that I could probably live without. And once again, I have to steal a word from a civil engineer who reviewed my house before Mr. DeBlau built it many years ago. I don't like the verticality. I want more horizontality. So when I look at that corner there, I think it would be nice if somehow that commercial, and I know this is going to probably mess things up on the site itself, but we either have to do a better job of softening it or flattening it a little bit so that it doesn't pop out. Again, getting back to size and scale, as Councilmember Dickens indicated. I also like the idea of phasing the project, not from the standpoint of a determining factor being west access or no west access, but just the project overall in terms of the circulation. The circulation segment itself, and I think Mr. Gutierrez brought up the issue of traffic and the fact that it's sourced from areas outside the village, and to a degree that's true. At the same time, if we are going to put in a development, it needs to carry its own weight in terms of providing, the best design it can so that we have a manageable circulation segment. With all due respect to the traffic study, I've driven those streets around there too many times, and not just during peak periods, and I'm afraid I'm having some issue with the outcomes of this traffic study as it relates to that area. I'm sorry, but that's just my opinion based on my actual experience with the site. Be that as it may, I believe that with a bit of additional work, we can make this happen. As far as the density and the residential component, I am pleased that we have individual residential components. I think, I'm not certain, but at one time we had interpreted mixed use to be live-work units where we did we not have some small offices back there at one point? I thought we did in one of the earlier versions. Not this one tonight, but I think in some of the earlier versions, one of the earlier versions didn't. I think we had some small offices back there. And some of the design features that I see here tonight, I think the proximity to the village would be a big plus. And I see this being pedestrian oriented. But as my colleagues have indicated, I share some of the same concerns that they do as well. I think we're getting really close, and I know that this has been a long, arduous process for the developer, certainly for the Mr. Bowd. I think he's been with this through the whole process. I think with just a little bit more focus on the problems and issues that have been raised this evening, we can make this thing work. So I'm hopeful that this will come back to us with those issues addressed, and hopefully we can make this happen. So those are my comments. If there are no other questions or no other observations, then I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I propose that we postpone to a date uncertain consideration of vesting tenement tract map case number 04-004 and plan unit development case number 04-001, applicant DB and M Properties LLC, location 415 East Branch Street, Creekside Mixed Use Center.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Diggins?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, thank you.
How are you guys doing? Keep going.
With the council's... With the council's concurrence, and my apologies to Angela, I'd like to jump to 10A and then come back to our final public hearing. Would that be okay? My apologies, Angela, because we had our quick sidebar before the council meeting, and I didn't catch it. It didn't register until we got into this previous item. We could have done this quickly, and you could have been on your way. So, and you didn't even have to come from across the street. So, I apologize for not bumping this up. We could have done that. So you can get mad at Steve. He should have reminded me.
Yeah, it's his fault.
Didn't. Yeah. Bad Steve.
Well, it's almost good morning, Sewer and Lopez Funds. Water fund revenue was increased by approximately $98,000 and the sewer fund by approximately $97,000. The preliminary revenue projections for these funds were based on 2004-05 consumption rates, which are lower than in the past due to the large amount of rain that we've received this year. The figures are now based upon the five-year average of consumption rates. The last modification was an increase of approximately $355,000 that was made to the budgeted expenditures in the Lopez Fund. This increase is based on the five-year forecast that we received from the County of San Luis Obispo. Also, you may note on the staff report, we had said we had made an error on our budget message saying 5% or 7% for 06-07 was an increase, and then we were saying that it should be 5%. You may have noticed on the water and wastewater study that Clayton presented that it is 7%, so we were correct. So there's no modification there. And Steve and I are available for any questions if you have this time.
Questions? Okay. We have no questions at this time on 10A. However, we will allow any member of the public who wants to come forward, if there is one member of the public, would like to come forward and speak on 10A.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, thank you very much. My name is John Dunn. I serve as the acting president and CEO of the Economic Vitality Corporation of San Luis Obispo County. And my apology, because you did have an earlier public hearing, a medical emergency prevented me from being here, and so that's why I'm here tonight. First, on behalf of the EVC Board of Directors, I would like to thank the City of Royal Grande and the City Council in particular for your support over the years. That support, both moral and financial, means a lot to us and assists us in carrying out our various programs. The EVC, with the county and all of the cities and corporate members, is the only countywide organization devoted to improving the economic vitality of the county and the creation of jobs. We take that responsibility seriously. Our programs, our two loan programs, and a number of others designed to assist in the retention, expansion, attraction of business and industry, and the saving additions of jobs. I'd like to mention that our board of directors held a retreat on June the 3rd. Councilmember Guthrie was an active participant. I can say that there was an active and freewheeling discussion of our EVC's role and function, of the services we present, and how we can better serve our constituencies. Out of that discussion was a consensus to more tightly focus on the activities that provide the greatest gain for our members, all of us, all of you, and for the county's economy. I am following up the thrust of the retreat discussions with the development of specific work programs. One of these work programs is to have a closer working relationship with the cities to better align our activities with what you have chosen as your city's economic goals and objectives. In that regard, I have requested a meeting with the city in this year's allocation to us. Obviously, while we would certainly appreciate receiving the full allocation, if that can't be done, then we would ask that you, based on our performance, consider restoring the full amount next year. Again, thank you for your past support. Thank you for your continuing support. And, of course, I'm available to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for John? Well, I just want to thank you for being here this evening, and the things that you had to say I think are probably things we needed to hear. There were some concerns about the degree to which the EVC was attending to perhaps what are often unique needs for its member agencies. So I think we'll be very mindful of what you're able to accomplish this year and take a fresh look at it next year based on that. So, thank you. Okay, we'll bring this back. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I don't have any additional comments or questions other than what we went through with the review of this, and I can support the budget going forward.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
My comments are the same. I think we've reviewed the budget. We've provided our input and just continued appreciation for all the work the staff has put into this. It makes our job a lot easier. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, have nothing to add. I can support this as proposed. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
I'd like to say again thank you to staff and Angela for the work in putting this together. Thanks for sticking around tonight to be with us. And I can support this as proposed.
Let me make it unanimous. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Royal Grande adopting fiscal years 2005 and 6 and 2006 and 7 two-year budget and making appropriations for the amount budgeted as submitted tonight.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem, Vice Chair Costello.
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Yes.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Yes.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Farrar.
Yes, as well. And perhaps our friends in the media can report the fact that we have a balanced budget and that we're not running out of money. Just a hint. Okay. That takes us to... Nine D, consideration of proposed resolution increasing operating fees by 5%.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. This goes along with the proposed budget. One of the budget strategies approved, as you recall, is involves an increase of 5% on some of the city's miscellaneous operating fees. Particular fees with the changes in the fees in that during that same time period since the original study was in place. And it found a significant variance between the two. And therefore, staff believes that it is very easy to justify the 5% increase at this time. The variation between the two is actually much more than 5%. However, we believe that if we wanted to go beyond the 5% at this time, it would really necessitate going back and doing a full update to the study, which we do hope to do over the next couple-year period. However, in the meantime, by being able to do an intermediate increase of 5% at this time, it helps the city not to fall any farther behind in terms of our cost recovery efforts. And it also can potentially provide an intermediate moderate increase and therefore help to prevent the need for a more dramatic increase in the future. So there's a number of benefits to that. The fee increase or recommendation does not impact any development impact fees, fees that are established per the Uniform Building Code or recreation fees at this time. The projected revenue from the increased fees is approximately $15,000. A resolution is provided in your staff report to approve the fee increase for your consideration, and approval of that resolution is respectfully recommended. Be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions for Steve on this report?
Steve, how much staff time is involved in doing the supplemental analysis? I mean, roughly.
The supplemental analysis, and I actually conducted most of that myself, it was probably, worked over 3-4 days, and it was a few hours in each of those days. It was probably
10-12 hours.
Yeah.
That's why I get an idea of how much time. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none. This is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience would like to come forward on 9D, this would be an opportunity to do so. No comment, Mr. Ross? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion. And Councilmember Dickens, if you want to start this, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I had a couple questions about this item, and so I spoke to Steve about it today. And it certainly helped clarify some of my misunderstandings in regards to the expenditure comparisons and so forth. I had some misconceptions about comparing the fiscal year 2001 to the current projections, but he was able to clarify that. And with that clarification, I certainly feel much more comfortable with this particular proposal. I think that it's imperative that you know, we look at three things as part of this staff report. One is that the percentage changes are well below the estimated changes that are reflected in attachment one. So I think that what we're really trying to do here is, instead of in the interim, before we do a full-pledged study, is to at least try. I think they're reasonable. We're not talking about dramatic changes. We're just talking about a potential for some cost recoveries for these particular services that are benefits to only those folks that are requesting these services, not to the community at large. So I don't have any problems with this proposal, and I think it's very reasonable.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
I think Councilmember Dickens covered it very thoroughly, that right now our costs have gone up considerably more than... No, it's on. Sorry.
Just have to get closer to it.
Narrow the night. I was just saying that I'd like to... I think Councilmember Dickens has covered this very thoroughly, that our costs have gone up considerably more than this proposed increase will, and so all we're doing is playing a little catch-up right now, and I can completely support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, I too can support it. When we were looking at reviewing this, when we were increasing the fees based on CPI and how we were tied up there, I remember being struck by the fact that the cost of doing the study is probably more than we would have gained in the years. I remember it was $20,000. It does seem like there has to be some alternative way of achieving that. I didn't realize we could do it quite this simply, but I think that I can support it because, I mean, clearly the expenses are up a whole lot more than CPI at this point.
And that was the kind of the issue. We didn't want to spend the money on the study at this time, so we figured out a way to do a supplemental to cover part of it. But eventually, if we want to really address these to its accurate amount, then we'd have to come back for the full study. But we're hoping maybe to hold off a couple of years on that and then come back with that.
Thanks. Okay, Mayor Pro Tem?
I agree with what I've been hearing. I think that we do want to do the full study within the 2 years as proposed, but this is indeed a reasonable compromise for the time being. Probably doesn't cover what it should, so I can support the increase at this time.
Thank you. I can only echo what my colleagues have said, and I can support this as well. With that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move for approval of a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending operating fees for community development, engineering, building, and fire services.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes, thank you. We've already handled 10A. That takes us to new business. We have none. Item 12 is City Council member items. I had one here on the... Nelson Green area, and this came to my attention through the Architectural Review Committee. And essentially what we're talking about here, and I think Steve agrees, that we can have Parks and Rec bring back a kind of a site plan, if you will, to the sidewalk and the area improvements that they have planned for Nelson.
I agree with some of it we don't, so I think we will probably bring forward a couple options, draw out a couple options incorporating their input, and then maybe an alternate plan that we put together and let the council give us some feedback on both of those.
Anybody have any heartburn with that? Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I didn't have an opportunity to add the item, but I believe it. I believe the item that I spoke to you, Steve, about earlier today fits better in council member items than it does in council communications. Would that be correct? Or can I add something now?
Actually, it would probably be appropriate under council communications. Okay. If you were to notify me beforehand, I'd put it under council member items.
So. Thank you.
The only difference under council member items is it allows for less discussion since it's not agendized.
Correct.
You can still bring it up.
Okay. City manager items?
None tonight, sir.
Okay. Council communication.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. it's come to my attention that there's a potential problem with the ongoing development on, I guess it would be, I'm not sure the actual name of it, but it's the current development just outside or the village on East Branch. And the potential problem, and again, I don't know whether it's actual or not, it is in regards to the buildings and their proximity in relation to the 25-foot required setback to the creek. It appears that those buildings are actually being developed within that 25-foot setback. And so what I was hoping to do is just bring that to the council's attention and seeing if we couldn't receive some feedback from staff as to whether that particular project is moving forward as designed and approved. And if there are any problems, whether those problems need to be addressed.
Well, I certainly would be supportive of reviewing anything that has to do, particularly right now, anything that has to do with or something that could be construed to having an impact on the creek and or the watershed. Particularly sensitive to that these days. So I would definitely be supportive of staff taking a look at that and making a determination as to how they wanted to bring that back to us.
Just in terms of options, would you like us to do an analysis and status report on that and send it to you and then let us know if you'd like to agendize that based on the results you see, or would you like to direct us just to go ahead and plan on agendizing the
staff's
report?
My comment would be certainly it's up to staff. Again, this is I don't know whether this is a real problem or just something that has come, you know, so I don't have any information. My comment would be that if there is building within the 25-foot setback from the top of the bank, that needs to come to council, because I have an interpretation issue that might be different than that. If this is
door-to-door handlers or salesmen, where they've had an extensive amount of information about the people living in the homes, and it's made a lot of my neighbors very uncomfortable. So I brought it to his attention, and he did research it. And one of the things that he'd like to bring to the attention of all the citizens is that if these people show up, to contact the police department, because they would like to investigate this. So feel free to call after they leave, or if possible while they're there. He also brought up that he would like to possibly, the department would like to possibly work with city council in developing possibly an ordinance where if our citizens feel threatened by the questions that are being asked by the door-to-door salespeople, that might be an enforceable act for the police department. Right now, we don't have a whole lot that they can work on. The door-to-door people are actually licensed, so there's going to be some exploring on that, but I'd like just to stay on top of that and see where that does go. Thank you.
Okay. I just had a very quick supplemental comment on, again, today's Board of Supervisors meeting. As I mentioned earlier, the Board of Supervisors did support unanimously a one-year extension or delay of the relinquishment of the maintenance of the flood control District Zone 11A to DWR. What that means is that all of us in South County that are impacted are going to find ourselves in a position of ownership of that problem, which I think is appropriate. That's where this is going. If we're going to keep this project on track, develop a viable local solution to this, we're all going to have to step up to the plate. So there's going to be much more coming on this this particular item. What we got today was a stay of execution. But if we don't step up to the plate and if we don't manage this project from practically from a local vantage point, if we don't develop an alternative work plan and a funding mechanism, then the worst-case scenario will become a reality, and that is relinquishment to DWR. So while we have everyone's attention, the work is just beginning. So I think what we have now is a willingness at the local level from a number of different entities, and I appreciate the support of the council. I was able to present your support today at that meeting, along with other city representatives. So just wanted to make that comment. We've made a crucial first step, but now there's going to have to be some follow through. Okay, staff communication?
No, sir.
Okay. And that takes us to our last item, community comments and suggestions. Anyone want to make any final comments? Why are you looking around the room?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I find myself in this hill. I had to sit around. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything else for the good of the cause? It is 7 minutes till, and motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Let's see. So those salesmen hit my name. They're real busy at the time. I just said, no, what are you selling? No, I'm not selling. So-and-so, next door, this, and he knew the dog's names. And I yelled,
it's freaky.
Well, he listened to everything we said. Against the door. What was he selling?
I've heard there's two of them. The one that hit our neighborhood, which I think is part of yours, supposedly he was selling some Christian material or something.
Sort of educational material.
But what's been really bothering people is, like, he comes into the garage door. He'll go in his backyard. In our case,
that's enforceable.
He pulled up in our driveway and came over to my side door. I mean, this guy is ballsy. He has pushed the limits so hard. And so the police, unfortunately, haven't been able to catch him on property. And so it's like anytime anybody rings the front doorbell, my wife's in the office, I'll say, okay, honey, you know, if I say, make that phone call, you know what I'm talking about, because I want to get this guy.
He's not going to come back, probably.
I hope not.
Not while you're there.
That's what I
mean. Well,
not while you're there.
In my case, it was funny. I was the same as you. He comes to my side door, and this was before I'd heard anything. And I just start. He starts coming, and I go, what are you selling? You know, because he starts trying to, you know, hi, yeah, I hear you're coming from an Arnold, you know, so-and-so, and so-and-so. I mean, he's, like, naming off all my neighbors and everything. And I go, what are you selling? And he starts, and I go, I'm not selling anything. And I could tell. I go, I'm not interested. And then he goes, so I can get credit, you know.